every time we're sitting in a meeting with somebody under cyber attack, it's the first time they've been there. We've been here loads of times. It's the first time they've been there. And quite often, unfortunately, they have been told by us, by other people, here are the risks that you have, right? And they're going, look, I'll do that next January. I'll do that in February. The simplicity of the challenge. So you can buy a kit, a ransomware kit, for $200 on the dark web, and it will literally give you an AI bot that will help you break into organizations. And you become a cyber criminal overnight.
It takes courage and belief in yourself and your business idea to take the step to set up your own business. In the early stages, entrepreneurship can be a lonely road, even through those milestone moments. Deciding to commit to the idea you've been mulling over, learning, growing, and developing your skills, building a team to help you along the way, preparing to launch into new markets. Enterprise Ireland is there for all of those startup moments. From providing advice and guidance to new founders through our startup network, to pre-seed funding and early investment, we're here to help bring your ambition to fruition. To find out how Enterprise Ireland can help you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Time's running out. Windows 10 support ends this October. That means no updates, no more security patches. That is a major risk for you and your business. But Nostra is helping you and your business upgrade. Book your free consultancy call. Simply click the link in the description below the podcast episode. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code FOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code FOX20 and elevate your marketing game today. Kevin, welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Gary. Great to be here.
Finally got you. Wore you down, eventually got you in.
I didn't think I was that hard to get.
Busy man.
Busy at the moment, yeah.
Good. What do you do?
So we are an IT business that ultimately provide all the technology and all the people for about 1,000 Irish companies to look after day-to-day technology. So internet connection, network servers, desktop, Office 365, cloud. But ultimately, it's all the people. Our business is about, I can't print, I can't send an email. And we work with companies big and small, from 20 users all the way up to 1,000 companies, like Dawn Farm Food Group as an example. And, you know, we manage all their IT infrastructure in Ireland and the UK, Germany.
Now I'm going to take a complete left and go completely away from IT and anything like that.
Yeah.
Talk to me about vision, right? Talk to me about how you set your vision. When you sit down, you're running a big company. Talk to me about what that looks like for you.
Well, for me, it starts with your personal vision. And I think what a lot of people miss is they go, right, I want to build a company that's going to do 5 million or 10 million or 20 million of turnover. And they go on that journey. And for me, it's about standing back and going, well, actually, why am I trying to do this, right? So what's my why? Go back to Simon Sinek's thing from, I probably looked at it in 2008 or 9 or whenever it first came out. And it's about, what is it that I want in my life? And for me, I back in, you know, the late, you know, well, the start of the recession, the late noughties, you know, things were very tough, right? Business was impossibly difficult.
What were you doing?
Doing Nostra, same business that we have. But I mean, you know, we were selling solutions where customers couldn't afford to pay you. You know, it was a mad time, right? You're putting a system to a company. I remember doing a local hotel here in Dublin, and we put in, you know, 40 Macs into their bedrooms so they could, you know, staff could, or customers could put iPods in and listen to music in their rooms. It was kind of a cool thing at the time.
Yeah, I remember kind of place like that. Yeah.
And we had charged 10 grand for it. And we had, you know, for doing all the actual work. and we couldn't get paid. And I ended up sitting in their hotel reception. And I remember the accountant coming down going, look, we have no money. We can't get additional funding, which we're meant to get from the banks. And then I'm ringing my suppliers going, I can't get paid from these guys or others, and therefore I can't pay you. And they're like, look, everyone's in the same boat. And it was kind of that, at that time, everyone got, you got away with it because everyone had the same challenge. So that was a really, really difficult time because, you know, we were only a startup company. We were only less than 2 years old. We'd absolutely no money. We were, you know, minus a million balance sheet, in real, real trouble. Personally, I had been a big property investor in my early 20s.
Which was
great in some ways because I sold some houses and was able to fund the startup of Nostra.
Okay.
But equally, I kept some, which I refinanced. And ultimately, I ended up, you know, with three empty houses with interest rates going through the roof, paying $5,000 a month. Well, I wasn't paying $5,000. I had $5,000 a month of a mortgage bill, which I couldn't pay.
They weren't in Longford or Mullingar or something random like that, were they?
No, Port Leash in Dublin, but... You know,
okay, not far off. Looks to be very poorly.
It made sense at the time. Near a hospital, buy a house.
I've done it too. I'm only getting out of it literally any day now. I'm expecting an email to get out of it, but it was a weird time.
Yeah, so I had mortgages gone out, had no income coming in. So personally, really in a financial challenge, business in a huge financial challenge, wasn't able to take a wage, and was basically living on bags of pasta. So in that moment, I kind of went away on a voyage of self-discovery, as people do, and I started even writing a book called Sitting on a Rock, which I've never published or finished and never should.
We'll work on the title before we publish.
Yeah. And the concept of it was, you know, when you stand back and go, what the hell is life all about? And I kind of went on a voyage of discovery, and I discovered that really for me, right, I get my kicks out of helping people. You know,
what age were you at the time?
29.
Okay.
29, yeah. 29, absolutely broke. You know, I remember my car was repossessed and I had, like, solicitor's letters on my mortgages and I had no money for rent and I was 3 months behind and it was all just a nightmare. And I sat back and I go, right, in the last 9 months, through the recession, what were the bad times? And I wrote out, like, hundreds of things that had all gone wrong. And then I wrote out on the other side of the page, going, oh, what were all the good things? And then I was going, what are the commonality in the good things? And the commonality was none of them cost money. They were all helping others. Like, I helped a friend of mine move out of his house and we were both broke at the time. And like, we were both like going to our gym bags to get coins at the bottom to put petrol in my car to move his stuff from his house, his old place to where he was moving to as temporary accommodation. And, you know, And in that night, we ended up getting a couple of beers and sitting out on a balcony and chatting completely broke and having a great night. And actually, the pleasure I got from actually giving a guy a hand and all of the different things that had been beneficial that year were all around helping people. And I said, right, okay, if I want to have a great life, I need to spend my life helping people and I want to help a million people. And I set that, you know, objective that in my lifetime, so before I die, hopefully in 50 or 70 years from now, that I'll have achieved that. And for me, helping people means that somebody will actually say, my interaction with Kevin or one of his companies actually resulted in me moving the dial on my own life. And that's very much what I'm about. And that's my personal objective. And therefore, Nostra is shaped around that. And it's really there from my perspective to help me achieve my lifetime goal.
And how then do you translate that into your everyday? Because I think that's the interesting piece. Like, I ask you this purely from a selfish point of view, and that I really enjoy vision setting. I do it probably definitely once a year, probably twice a year, then reviewing and starting like send mini reviews every quarter. How do you then action that daily? So if you want to help a million people, that's a big goal. How did you then translate that down to go where you were in like a difficult situation to go, okay, if I want this, here's what I need to do today, tomorrow, and the next month?
Yeah, so if I just take go back to that period, right? So at a point when I was taking no wage and what really was a light bulb moment. So I went off on a tangent at the start, right? And I got involved in gyms and I got involved in a chiropractic clinic and I'm going, okay, well, maybe I can help people by actually making them fitter and healthier and better, right? But actually, if you move away from your core, what you're actually good at, it's never going to work. So about 2011, one of the guys came into my office, and I was kind of going, all these other companies are going to help people change, and then Nostra is going to basically pay the wage. And then somebody walked into my office and goes, I just want to let you know I got my mortgage approved. And he's like, and it was a, no, this is a big deal. It had gone on for like months trying to get it. And he ended up getting his mortgage approved, got a house. And I was literally there in that moment going, ah, I can actually help people in this business without trying to make people fit, which I was terrible at doing, by the way. And I sold off the gyms. Well, I sold one, closed one, and I sold off the chiropractic business. And then I got back to Nostra. I was like, right, I need to make this a massive company for me to be able to help loads of people and help get the mortgages and houses and everything else. And then ultimately put all my focus into it. I said, right, for me to do that, what do I need to do? So a million people is a big number.
Mm.
So to achieve that, Nostra has to become Ireland's largest company in my lifetime. So in very simple terms, that's Ireland's largest business over the next 30 years. So that's the end point. And then you bring it back to today. So how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? So you go, okay, well, what's achievable in the short term? And, you know, if you take a, you know, our business at that time was doing 1.5 million in revenue. So if you take that on an Excel spreadsheet and just go 10% growth, you know, how many years does it take to get to where you want to get to? You'd be surprised at how big the number gets, but it doesn't get to Ireland's largest company by 2050. So we ultimately sat down, told the people who I worked with what I wanted to achieve. And then it was like yearly chunks. So what I do now is I take a blank Word or Paint document on my PC, take images of all the things I want to achieve in the year, have it as my desktop background. I've got the same on my phone. I'm very public about it. So in the office, everyone knows what I'm about. If you walk into our building, you'll see posters up that will say our objective is to change the lives of a million people. You know, so it's very omnipresent no matter where you are in my life, home and in work. And that's how I do it. And it's about just keeping the awareness up all the time and every day, what can I do today to move the dial?
But it's very refreshing to hear people say that, especially in Ireland. Because people can kind of go, oh, vision boards are woo-woo and manifestation is woo-woo and blah, blah, blah. But I'm a big believer in it. Like, and I was overthinking that. I had it on Pinterest and I was like, how do you make that? You're like, just paint. Just like make your desktop. I was like, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
But you have to see it, right? One of my most overused phrases is you have to see it to be it. I say this in the pod all the time, yeah. Followed by the how do you eat an elephant. I love that phrase. But you just, it comes down to just repetition and seeing. I was just literally saying to Ben when you were outside there a minute ago, I was like, it's just the reps, Ben. I'm just going to outwork everybody.
Yeah.
Just going to hit that 1,000 episode number quicker than anybody else and then keep going. And it's that, but it's pairing it back to today. It's pairing that back. And that's why I love asking you that question, because I think it's kind of cathartic and kind of nice to set big goals. And I do a big planning session and I release it as a podcast every year in January because people always do resolutions.
Hmm.
It's like, no. Stop that. What's your output goal? What's your input goal? What's your output goal for Q1? What's your input goal going to be every single day to get there?
Yeah.
Because people love doing the outputs because it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's really good. Oh, I'd love to like have a Porsche.
Yeah.
Cool. What's the input?
Yeah.
What are we going to do on a Monday morning to get that Porsche?
And like the interesting thing is, right, and I kind of look at, you know, a vision board for me is like a sat nav, right? If you don't have a vision board, right, and if you just think of a sat nav, right? I came from Galway today, as I mentioned to you this morning. And, you know, if I was going to Galway yesterday, right, and let's just say no signposts on the road, I get in and every single junction I get to, I have a choice. Do I go left or right? Every junction. And there's hundreds of them all the way down to Galway. I know I'm going to Galway. The sat-nav tells me where I'm going. I don't have to think about it. And then my job is just to get to Galway. If your life, you don't know what you're going after, every single time you get to a crossroads, you have to make a decision. And that's incredibly tiring. So, you know, decide what you want. Decide that that's the journey you're going to go on, and it just like a sat nav, you now know your direction. So now you know you need to go right. I want to, like some people say, I want to do my own company, and I want to set it up in the next 2 years, right? And then the next day they get a LinkedIn request from somebody that says, you know, hey, listen, looked at your profile, would you consider coming to the UK and working for us for 2 years in new business sales? And we'll pay you 80 grand a year. And they're like, oh yeah, let's do that. And they're gone there, and then you know because they're not really clear on exactly what they want to do once you know, then it's like, well, actually, no, I can't, because I'm in the middle of setting up my new company. And people have to set an objective. Otherwise, you let the world decide what your path is. And if the world is deciding, you probably won't end up where you want to be.
Me and you are both kind of Whoop fanatics. We talked about it outside. And you're the first person I've ever met who has it as long as I do, apart from the guys who actually work in Whoop. I think they're the only ones I've seen who have actually a longer status streak than I do. But I always said to people exactly what you said there about the sat-nav. It's weird you use the same analogy. I was like, well, it's 25 quid a month. And I use the sat-nav going, it's like, you know, your sat-nav for your health and your life. You shouldn't be reactive to it, but it allows you to like look at the data and kind of going, what's the trend here? What am I seeing in the data? It's like, if you, exactly, I use the same thing. If you're driving to Kerry, like you might get there in the end, but would you not just rather have all the data points along the way to just go straight there, as opposed to kind of like, kind of feel okay today? That's not really a measurable objective of like, how do you actually feel? Whereas you have that over the month, you're able to go, yeah, I'm not definitely not sleeping enough.
Yeah.
And then you tweak it.
Yeah. And I think that's a valid point, right? So, I mean, if I take Whoop and, you know, I wear, and we discussed this earlier again, right? The you know, the Whoop doesn't have a screen. And for me, that was the attraction. I remember somebody told me about it. I actually think it was James in The Punnett in The Last Duel, for those at home. And I get told about it. And I was like, okay, all he told me was a device that gives you all your medical data with no screen. And I was like, I'm in. Because I had an Apple Watch for about 3 weeks. And the distraction, I was like, that is the worst thing for anybody. I just think anything that's distracting you that much in your arm, and I know you can turn all those things off, but I'm not one of the people that's able to do that. And even if I know it's there, I'm going to keep going in and looking at it. So I love the fact that it doesn't have that. But, you know, if I go back to, you know, my vision and your objective, right, you have to get yourself set up properly, right? So for somebody to go and achieve something big, they have to be healthy, they have to eat right, they have to sleep right, they have to, you know, set themselves up. So for me, like I do meditation every single day, every day without question, guided meditation, half an hour at night, as many days of the week as I can, half an hour during the day. And it's invaluable because you have to let your mind slow down to actually move faster.
I think that's so interesting. People would look at you at a very fast paced company, a very big company, and realize that you do that every day.
Yeah.
How do you do it? As in like, what's your kind of process?
I have about 10 recordings, maybe 15 on my phone, saved in files, and just open up and pick one. And I've got one for, you know, I have ones that'll get you to go to sleep at the end, ones that'll wake you up at the end. I've got different people who've done them for me over the years. I now actually use AI to write them out, and then it plays it back for me.
No way. So how do you do that? You tell it what you want meditation to be about, or what?
Yeah, so I effectively what I do is you can put it into, so process, put it into ChatGPT or Copilot. Here, I want to do a meditation that's 37 minutes long that is going to tell me to, you know, eat healthier, to relax the mind, to be, you know, to be more present, to not pick up your phone, whatever it wants and things that you want, right? So you put it in. It'll build you a meditation, and then you use one of the apps, there's loads of them, to convert the text into an MP3, and then you have it on your phone, just save it in and do it.
That's brilliant.
It's cool.
That's so good, because I started using the Waking Up app recently, and I was like, it's all right, but I find I get distracted then if I don't like it. I'm like, no, I don't like this one. And like, yeah. I have 10 minutes, I'm sitting there going, I don't like this one.
Yeah.
I don't like this one. But I'm sitting there. Whereas I'd love to be able to kind of go, today I want to focus on like confidence and, you know, decision making.
Yeah.
If I could build that, that's cool.
Yeah, but I would also say my experience is you need a lot of repetition. Like I would say it probably takes 30 to 60 days of listening to the same meditation for it to have an impact that you need.
Yeah.
So I tend not to change them that often. And like, you know, I would also say that, you know, when you think of a long-term vision, so like my long-term vision, ends, I've built an event, right? And the event is that in 2050, awards for the people in Nostra that have helped the most amount of people. The only place they could house the event because of the scale was Madison Square Gardens. Turn up with my wife, kids, in a Rolls Royce Phantom, arrive in, I'm a car guy, by the way, right? So arrive in and, you know, there's everyone there in black tie, there's a speech on, and I'm giving out awards to all the people who've done it, right? So that's the kind of the piece that you play in your head which gets
you tell AI about this. You're like, I want it to be about this, and I want it to have this vision, and I wanted you to help me kind of like visualize that, or how do you do it?
No, so you could, right? What I do is I know the story and I know the vision. So what I get AI to do is, you know, bring up all the visual pieces, bring up all the auditory bits. So it's just prompting me at that moment. So then I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking about the car pulling up and getting out and how you're feeling and the smell of a caramel macchiato, because that's about the only thing I can bring a smell up straight away, or a coffee. And then, you know, perfume, and you walk in and you've the heat of the room and the lights that are on, and, you know, you're getting into the real
tricky detail. You're really feeling it.
Yeah. I'll invite you.
That's there. And there, that's but I love this stuff. I love people who are very deliberate. I think as I get older, I like to be more intentional about what I do, how I do it, who I do it with, right? And that comes down to yourself. We talked about it outside. If you're not working on yourself, and you're not being deliberate about how you spend your own time when you have all the choice in the world, it's just never going to ripple out. You're never going to get the outcomes you're looking for. So you meditate. Go back. I talk about body. It's so weird. I talk about body, business, brain on the pod. And I had this kind of like realization maybe about a month ago where I was like, nah, you're forcing it too hard. Stop making people talk about it. Then yesterday, someone brought it up. Then you brought it up. I was like, okay, maybe it's just the universe saying, maybe just don't be too uptight about it. People will bring it up when they want. But that's really interesting that's how you believe. Because that's what I believe. I believe that the modern founder will look after their body. Healthy body, fit mind, profitable business. Just makes sense. Because I've interviewed a lot of founders and they're none of those things. They're really unhappy. They've had the success because they used your analogy, or they used the thing you said there, where they just kind of let the sea take them to whatever port they shall get to. And they're luckily enough, they pulled into the port with the gold in it and they sold their business.
Yeah.
And you're chatting to them and you're like, oh, I think they realized the port was good, but now there's no port.
Yeah.
There's nowhere else to go.
And, you know, there's a piece of other things that I've debated over the years. I mean, I think another key critical part, certainly when you take happiness into account, like your business has to leave a positive stamp. You know, there are businesses that are bad for the world, that make things that make people unhealthy. You know, and I often wonder how the founders or how the people who run that business are, right? Like, for me, I get great pleasure out of knowing that Nostra does really good things, and we try our best. We don't always get it right, right? And we're in IT security, which is not an easy space to be in a lot of times. But our team's intent is incredible, and you know, when things go wrong, everyone is trying to do the right thing, right? And I think, you know, for me, when you have a business that is at its core is trying to help people, then, you know, I would almost argue, if I'm trying to help a million people and my business is impacting five, then I have to help a million and five people to get back to my million, right? So it's a net number. So you have to do the right thing by your customers. You have to do the right thing by your team. And sometimes it can look like you're not doing the right thing, but actually your intention is right and you're trying to do the right thing. And sometimes the right thing is not what everyone wants, but it still is the right thing.
Yeah, I think intention is the big one. We already talked about it, but like, yeah, I think people being more open about their intentions, because people are afraid to fully say what they believe. They're kind of hedging their bets, kind of like to hide it behind some corporate kind of mumbo jumbo language. And you're like, what does that really mean though?
Yeah.
Sometimes the founder will tell me about their company. I'm like, I don't know what any of that means.
Yeah.
Never mind what you do. I don't understand all the other words that followed after it. Like, how do you stay true to that? Because you're growing very quickly and you're building a big business. And as you said, in a very complex, you know, if you were running like the Punnett or whatever, Barry Napier came on. I swear to God, I was like, if you don't have shares in that place, I don't know what is going on. He mentioned it over and over. Anytime he sends me a photo, it's of the Punnett. But if you're running a health food shop, you can kind of, you know, it's quite tangible. You can kind of go, okay, we're helping people health food. For you in such a dynamic area of cybersecurity and IT, how do you stay true to that? How do you keep that as the North Star?
So it comes down to your own rules, right? So, and again, you know, at my core, I'm a techie, right? I love technology, right? Now, I'm not somebody who'll ever sit in front of a computer and program. I went to college for 3 months doing that and realized that's not for me. I'm a people person, but I love technology. So, you know, I see certainly my role is to make sure that we keep an eye on the technology that's going to keep our customers safe. So, you know, we've, what I would say is mantras keep you on track. So, you know, we've a mantra in sales.
Mantras.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've a mantra in sales. You can't sell something to a customer you wouldn't sell to a family member. Now, I will qualify that, assuming you like the family member, right?
That's a very good qualification.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a simple rule because in technology, people, the buyer obviously, or not obviously, is generally not as educated about the technology as we are. So therefore, it is very easy in technology to oversell. So we don't like that at all. And actually, we've lost salespeople over the years. And they're like, but the customer's willing to buy it. Like, you know, I remember we got a PO from a customer for this huge UPS, which is basically a battery if the power goes out and you're able to keep your servers running. And it was like 6 times the size and 6 times the price. So instead of $2,000, it was like 14,000. And it was recommended to the customer by his brother. And he was like, I want to get this. Our guy quoted it, sent it in. Customer sent back a PO. I came across it and I was like, why are we selling them that? And he's like, well, that's what he wants. I was like, absolutely no way. So, you know, I rang the customer and said, you don't need this. This is like totally overkill. It's, you need a, you know, $2,000 one, not a $14,000 one. Sales guy resigned over it. He was like,
no.
I get commission off this. Your customer's happy. I don't see what the problem is. That customer is still a customer today, but 10 years later, 15 years later, even. And like the reality is that mantra is really important because it allows people, like there's so many sub-meanings of it.
Yeah.
Everyone in
yeah.
the company who hears it.
Removes doubt. Yeah.
And you know that you're trying to do the right thing all the time. And then the other one, Barry, my brother who runs the business with me, you know, Barry would have a thing in the service department as an example that, you know, anything we do, we have to do the right thing. So the right thing sometimes means it's good for us. Sometimes it means it's bad for us. But what is the right thing? So if somebody will ring Barry and go, right, we've got a customer and their server infrastructure has gone down and their part has failed and actually, you know, the warranty is out by 2 years and the customer wouldn't do an upgrade and the whole site is down and they're not able to function. And they want a loan server. So do we crack open a box and open a brand new server and put it into them as a temporary while we get them a new one or get them fixed? And Barry's answer is always, what's the right thing? So in that case, the right thing is to get the customer back up and running. There's 50, 70, 90 jobs at risk. You got to do it. So, you know, those mantras in a company help everyone understand what the company is about.
I love that because you hear so much about culture, company culture, but it's actions. It's what people actually do as opposed to what's written up in a lovely poster. It's what are the actions, the day to day that they're living through. Like that's simple. What's the right thing?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not kind of, there's no real kind of like, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. It's like, what's the right thing to do here? I always joke about it. I was like, I actually made the joke to Eamon earlier. We were talking about someone. I was like, or they could just be sound.
Yeah.
Just be sound.
Yeah.
What's the, you know, what would you do if you're just going to be sound in this situation?
Yeah.
Because people are always trying to like overanalyze everything. I was like, yeah, but it could just be sound as well.
Yeah. But also, like, you look at things like, you know, AI is obviously coming up lots on your pod, right? And I look at AI and I go, there's no question, but it's going to be a huge part of all business in a couple of years. AI could cannibalize some of our business, could reduce revenue in certain areas. Go back to your thing. What's the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
So we got to get out and help our customers do it. Internally, I see AI as a huge opportunity. If we get it right, that we're able to pay our staff more, we're able to look after them better, because actually if we can gain efficiencies, we can pass it on. And I have a huge drive in our business and our marketing department are putting together a process at the moment where internally we're going to do this brand of have you asked AI, and just a simple posters up around the place, questions on the bottom of emails, internal team channels, have you asked AI? Because, you know, you're going around asking people, listen, do you know what the contract renewal date is for this customer, and somebody's going logging into a system and trying to figure it all out. But actually, Copilot, you know, might get 75% of the answers instantly. And all those little 5 minutes and 2 minutes and 3 minutes across, you know, a business of our scale can have a huge difference. And I would say the same for our customers. So we will always operate in the business of what's the right thing. we will always go, what is the angle at which we can go at? And for me, AI has a huge opportunity, particularly in the IT space, to massively improve the working conditions of everyone who works in the industry.
It's so interesting you approach it from that. Like with AI, you kind of hear like, oh, so everyone's going to like job losses and entry-level roles will be gone. And whereas you look at it as like, we can increase the quality of work we do, the way our employees are paid, people can do better work. Like, it is a mindset shift, isn't it?
It's a mindset. It absolutely is. I mean, I honestly see it as, I think today where it plays the strongest is it gives every person a personal assistant, which people who've never had a personal assistant, very hard to comprehend it. But in reality, it's going to get so much basic stuff done for you.
Yeah.
Get you faster answers. It gets you quicker reporting. You write a document, you throw it in, clean it up for me. You know, spell check is dead, right? AI is much better. There's a little bit more proofing, but the overall speed and performance is better. Mm. You know, you write a LinkedIn post, right? Throw it into AI. I need to get a better response on a LinkedIn, and here's what I'm looking for. And it's going to throw you back 10 suggestions, right? So you have to look at how it's going to actually benefit you, right? So, like, and for founders, and particularly people who aren't tech and they aren't Excel gurus, it can be really frustrating getting a set of accounts. You get a set of accounts, you're looking at it, you're trying to analyze it, what's up, what's down, where are we going wrong? You know, forget about your Excel expertise. You just don't need that anymore. Throw it into an AI bot, whichever one you use, whatever your preference is, they all do it. And then ask it questions. Give me some advice on the accounts. What's growing? What's not? What's the fastest growing thing in our line? What's the slowest growing? Is there any margins that are disproportionate that you're seeing? Do you see the cost line going up too high in any one line item? You know, what advice would you give me off the back of it? And you're just able to ask plain English questions as if you're sitting with your CFO and you get all these answers back. Now, you have to qualify and say they're not always accurate and it doesn't always pick things up properly. Yeah. But it really helps give you a much better insight and analysis of your numbers.
Especially if you look at the rate of improvement in it in the last 6 to 9 months, 12 months maybe. Like, it was pretty patchy 12 months ago, whereas now, especially I think the breakthrough for me was speaking to it, having audio, being able to just speak, like you said, ask it questions. But kind of like, I always found the prompts quite difficult because I was like, oh, that's not it. But I was typing them out it took me as long to do the prompt as it would have me to do the original post or whatever. Whereas I found when I was able to naturally speak to it in my own language, go, hey, look, I'm thinking about this. Can you do me like da, 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 da? Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay. Can you refine that down now and take that out, but put that back in? Mm. Like a conversation as if me and you were chatting here. Mm. I think the piece is the execution, what comes after. That's when it's going to get really exciting.
Yeah.
So can you handle that for me?
Yeah. And to give me an example, right? So an employee recently sent me a really good email. Here's a load of observations. I'm in the business a year. Load of observations of things that I think we need to do. It was about 4 pages long.
It's a long email.
Well, yeah, it was a long email. I woke up in the morning and I read it. I was going through it all. I was going, agree with that, agree with that, agree with that, agree with that. Like loads of it. And then I was like, okay, how am I going to action this? I'm mad busy week ahead of me. Don't want the person to feel like I didn't respond. So throw it in, quarter it out. Just give me the 5 top things in this email that are most important, and pops out 5 answers. So email back, just to come back to you, really appreciate your email. Here's the 5 things that I think we should get done. And then I literally put beside, you know, at the different people in the company who I wanted to actually read of it, have a look at your section below and get it done. You know, a minute and a half and all dealt with. And it's that, you know, efficiency you can gain. That was probably saved me 15 minutes.
But the ripple effect of that could be astronomical. Yeah. If a couple of those things are implemented, and like you said earlier, but raising things up, taking 2 minutes off here and 3 minutes here, but if they raise up like 5% of performance across a big company like yours, that's astronomical.
Yeah.
And the compounding effect of that is, as you say, like, you know, you're looking at your revenue figures and you think 10% every year isn't much. If you're making all those little incremental improvements, I think it's great to have conversations with people like you about AI, because how are people really using it? Like me and you chatted and had a laugh off air about, like, you know, there's a lot of hand waving. There's a lot of kind of like, AI is great.
Yeah.
Just kind of like all this stuff, but no kind of going, and here's how you can actually use it today.
Yeah.
here's what will actually make a difference apart from having the crack asking the funny questions like we all did with Google back in the day, or you know, whatever.
I know.
You know, like, you know,
you're feeling lucky.
Geez, that's crazy. Yeah, exactly, right? Whereas when you kind of go, okay, this, but then that, and then it spits out an action. Like that's, I think especially for smaller companies, I think it's going to be great because you think compete with companies who maybe don't have a CMO, you don't have a CFO, you don't have these people, experts in your company, but now you got someone to bounce everything off. And as you said, like they might get you 75% of the way there, but you're off.
Yeah. Oh, no, but it's everything. I mean, look, you know, even we're evolving our business model at the moment and, you know, you're thrown in, look, here's the scale of the business we are. What are the things we need to consider? Here's what we're thinking about. And it's just able to spit back talking points, right? There's value there. You know, for me, the most value is about getting fast answers on internal data. Copilot does that really well. And, you know, and that's about, you know, can I have the P&L? Like, for instance, you go, I want my P&L for the last 3 years. And so historically, that's ring your CFO. Can I get my P&L for the last 3 years? And half an hour later, they'll send it across to you or whatever. Now it's kind of my P&L for the last 3 years, and it'll just go and find them in your network and send them across to you. And it's that speed of internal data and analysis, right? You turn around and you go, you know, I'm like, for example, you're sitting in a meeting with a customer and they're going, actually, your Cloud Shield product, your security product, can we get some information on that? And I'm sitting there going, like, I know at a high level, but actually, let me have a look, go into Copilot, give me the latest marketing information on Cloud Shield, and it just gets it. And it's that really valuable. That's available right now and really powerful. On the likes of ChatGPT, I find it phenomenal. Particularly, you know, we have to be careful to make sure these are all set up properly. Now, when I say that, it's minutes to set them up properly, but you don't want your company data leaking to the overall search data, you know. So, you know, tell me all of Gary's P&L information and you've put it in and now it's available.
Yeah, okay.
So you have to be careful. But, you know, the public information that you're able to get and the research, I would say, you know, tax advice, research, you know, a challenge around planning, right? Anything that's any information that's publicly available.
And factual.
Mm. It's really easy to get it. So, you know, we discussed this before. You know, I want to build a something on the side of my house. So what are the planning things I need to consider? What's the process? Write me out a thing. Write me a letter. Who do I need? What are the recommendations? And all of a sudden you have it all. Yeah. What are the planning restrictions? Can I do it? And any information that's public is searchable. From a research point of view, you know, like we can turn around and go, give me, you know, the top 10 companies in County Leash that have between 50 and 500 employees and give me the LinkedIn connection of the founder. And you're able to, you know, it'll go off and do a deep research and takes half an hour and it comes back with really powerful data that you're able to go, actually, well, there's some companies we'd like to work with and let's get our new business team to go and reach out to them. So I think what people have to understand is that it is the most powerful research tool that exists. You don't always get the accurate data back. It is a phenomenal editing tool. It's an incredible personal assistant. And recently, you know, we were looking for a new office and we actually used ChatGPT to do the research, because actually when you go into the different search engines for the different property sites, there's information which is not as easy to get, right? So I literally put in, I'm looking for all the buildings that are for sale between 20 and 50,000 square foot, closest to our current office, which is in Park West, that are for sale or for lease at this moment in time, right? And I needed something like a minimum of 50 car parking space. So I put in all the criteria and it found me 4 buildings and we bought one.
No way.
Yeah. It's so powerful.
And that's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you want to go and say, well, I want to buy a house with 4 acres of land somewhere or more, there's no search in any of the engines that'll do that. But you can go into ChatGPT, can you search the Irish websites and give me all the properties for sale with more than 4 acres of land with a double garage and with a wine cellar, whatever your specific taste
is. Go Celtic Tiger, why not?
Yeah.
A bar, home but, bar and a wine cellar.
A home bar,
yeah. Full Celtic Tiger
yeah,
job.
Yeah, a penguin cage at the end of the garden. But it's able to just go in and it pulls them all out. And it literally goes, because it'll be written in the description, there's 4 acres and 3 acres and 2 acres. So whatever it's whatever you are looking for, again, going back to our mantra internally, have you asked AI and the power of it?
This is an interesting point because I was looking for like studio space recently and I was searching my home, or searching my home in Daft. I was like, commercial space, Dublin, you know, zero to like $8,000. And it's just like 600 pages. Jesus Christ. It was, no, sorry, not 600 pages. It was 680 listings in Dublin City. I was like, holy shit. So I just sat there for like 45 minutes scrolling through, and 90% of them aren't correct. But do we have a massive lag in terms of like how the websites and data is presented now versus what ChatGPT is able to do? Like, are we dealing with some poor data over here?
Yeah, well, there's definitely a lag, right? And in fairness, right, the guys in Distilled Media, I know them, right? They're super sharp, right? I have no doubt that they will bring AI deep into their platform in the near future. There is a lag, right? But actually, there's also an interesting point, and not everyone will agree with me. In fact, most people won't agree with this, right?
Brilliant. This will be one for TikTok. Go on ahead.
There is an argument to say that the most reliable data we'll ever get from AI is today.
Because AI isn't generating at all.
Because websites are currently not set up to work with AI. And therefore, all the websites that currently exist, we're peeling all the information that they have on there.
Yeah.
But when they realize how AI works and the changes they need to make their website, they can manipulate.
Start gaming it.
Yeah, they can start gaming it. So, you know, you take a piece of software and you have a software and a company called B and a company called C, right? And B just has to create a whole load of AI-centric websites that says it's better than A and C, and all of a sudden we're getting that information back. Whereas at the moment, generally, the information that's coming back is the information that's on the website, that's compared, that's on forums and everything else. But when the manipulation starts kicking in, I don't know how AI and how the companies behind it are going to deal with that. Because one of the risks with AI is the trust people put in the information it gets back. Because it doesn't necessarily qualify everything. It doesn't say, you know, here's a recommendation, a piece of advice, and by the way, this is based on, well, it does say where they're from, but it's not that prescriptive.
Well, people could take it as gospel.
People trust it, yes. And it says it in a way. Its terminology is, you know, this is how you should do it.
It's very convincing.
It's very convincing.
Sometimes I have to all right, I'll sit back. I was like, called her Sophia. I was like, Sophia, are you sure? Can you tell me the reasons this won't work? Because I'm always like going, hey, what about this? And she's always like, that's amazing, Gary. I'm like, I think you're giving me a lot of false affirmation here, telling me I could do anything.
Yeah.
I was like, maybe it needs a bit more restraint.
Yeah.
Where is it pulling all the information from currently, do you know?
It's any public source and or private sources. I mean, like, you know, again, you can, I mean, there's certain plugins within some of the tools and you can plug straight into your own, you know, accounts in different platforms, and actually it's able to pull from those as part of it. But, you know, the majority of the data, I mean, if you look at the, I'm not sure if you've ever watched when it's doing a deep search and it's telling you at each point what it's actually doing. Have you done that?
No.
It's really interesting because it's like, you know, right, searching all the companies that are IT companies in Ireland, listing out the top 20 IT companies by employee count on LinkedIn. Ooh, now I'm searching for, you know, this other company, which doesn't look to be an MSP, but actually three employees in this company left there and went here. And so if you go into the details on a deep search, it's actually explaining at every point it's thinking. And it's really human-like. So it's just bouncing around and going, oh, I'm on this website and now I found this other website over here. So now
okay,
I'm gonna go
so it's following, pulling trails, breadcrumbs. Okay, yeah, interesting.
Pulling breadcrumbs, it's pulling information, and then it centralizes it all back and works back from there.
So for people listening, you've kind of adopted in your business already. What should they be doing now? Because I think me and you both chatted earlier about, like, you know, AI is kind of like, you know, here in terms of actual adoption versus here versus hype. What should people be doing if they have a business, they're listening, they're kind of going, yeah, do you know what, if Kevin's right, I've kind of been like giving it lip service, I've kind of said, oh, you should do AI, but not really fully following through. Where is the kind of low hanging fruit for businesses?
Okay, so I'd say a couple of things. First of all, we are adopting it. I wouldn't say we've adopted it, in that it is a huge uphill change in how people operate to move to AI. There's also...
Do you mean mindset-wise, Kevin, or what?
Yeah, because again, it's, you know, I used to ask John, and I used to go over here and do this, and now I'm going and asking a bot. So it is a change. And then, you have the false starts and you put in, like, for instance, we bought a number of AI tools 2 years ago. And I'd say we bought three, you know, I'm probably saying we've invested 300,000 in three different tools. One of them is still in the business. And at that, it's probably a break-even tool. The other two were unsuccessful as projects. And the hype was incredible around them. I would say we have still a long way to go to get our teams to adopt it at the level that we want them to be at. But that's the journey that we need to go on. We have to educate them. So if we talk about where you start, so for me, you start with, you know, if you're in a small company, the owner has to do it. Because once the owner understands how it can impact, they will really, really adopt it in their organization. So for us, myself and Senan and Gary and Barry and kind of the original founders all sort of started playing with it. The senior leadership team all are, you know, we're the next layer down, and now we're pushing it down to the next layer beneath that. And our objective is to get people to use it every hour of every day. And it's about advertising use cases. It's about telling other people about, you know, I did this with it and here's where it's
right.
Valuable.
Okay.
So again, I've probably mentioned some use cases already, but for me, it's about like CEOs and founders, you know, give me 10 new products I should consider for my business. And I would say, look, Copilot or ChatGPT, have both, right? These are inexpensive tools versus what they actually deliver back. And ask them both, and you'll get to realize the nuances of where one is better than the other. But the deep research functionality, founders love it. When I show it to them, they're like, oh my God, that's brilliant. I was in a meeting recently and the company had a piece of software that I'd never heard of, and it was problematic in their business. And they asked us for an opinion of how we manage it. I said, I'd never heard of it. Said, have you and used AI to use it at all? No. So we logged into my AI from their PC in their boardroom, and we literally put in the name of the software, what it did, what their challenges were, where it was. And it literally came back and said, you know, here's an integration that does this thing that you're looking for. Here's an integration that does this. Here's a partner in Paris that develops it. Here's one in the UK. Here's one in New York. And it literally gave us all the solutions in the meeting. And it was a real eye-opener for that organization about the power of the research functionality.
Right. So it was able to get like an instant consultancy.
Yeah.
As opposed to having to pay someone to come in and go, okay, we'll look at this for a couple of weeks and then we'll come up with a plan.
Yeah. I would encourage everyone to go, right, what are the top, get your leadership team into a room, give them a piece of paper and say, what are the top 10 challenges in our business today? And let them all write out their own lists. Then go into AI and put in those challenges, one after the other, each person. And I would say that 2 or 3 of the 10, they will find some really interesting insights into how to solve them in that process.
So talk to me then, going back, about your business, right? So how did you get from where we were in 2010-11, the 1 million in turnover, to where you are now? Because it seems to have been a, not rapid, because it's still quite a while, but it seems to have been a very steady trajectory, a very clear plan. How did you begin executing, and how did you grow to this scale that you are today?
It was very easy. We never had any problems. It just went every day and it got better. And here we are.
Thanks for coming in, Kevin. Appreciate it. Where can people learn more about you?
Yeah. So with massive difficulty. Yeah. So
Give us all the warts and all. These are the bits that people love.
I always say to people, right, I never get too bothered about plans, because the one certainty with a plan is it's not going to happen, right? You'll beat it, you'll miss it, you'll get half it, you'll lose half it. But so the objective is to get the first journey down. So I would say a number of things. One, personally, I wasn't in a good place. And when you're not in a good place personally, your business can't be in a good place. So I started doing my meditation. I started training. I never went to a gym before I was 28. So January 2008, started in a gym, and I've done Monday to Friday in a gym every day, 6 o'clock. Since then. So that's what, 17 years now.
Immense, yeah.
And I wouldn't miss it. And being honest with you, I'm also not that, so people go, geez, you're very disciplined. I'm not that disciplined. I have to get somebody to train with me to hold me accountable to be there every morning. Right. So
systems.
Connor and Ryan, if you're listening, thank you both.
Shout out the lads. There's a lot of consistency from their part as well.
Yeah. So,
but it's systems. We talked about it. You got to fool yourself.
You do.
I just put such rigid systems in place that I've no choice. Because if I had a choice, I wouldn't do it.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I'm exactly the same. So then I think, you know, in 2012, I met my wife, and I think, you know, Lisa and, you know, bringing stability to the home made a huge difference, because now you're settled, you're comfortable, you're happy. And then really, so I would say I got myself set up, and then from there, you know, 2013, 2014, we started to kind of nudge towards 2 million. And then in about, I'd say probably January, February 2014, we paid off the last of our historical debt, because we were servicing a debt pile for a lot, like 5-6 years. And we were effectively, every cent we earned went in to pay off the debt. And it wasn't good debt. This is, you know, debt to suppliers, debt to, you know, banks, debt to, you know, people. We were in arrears and all those other things that had happened. So once our debt pile was cleared off and we couldn't get any finance, so then we had first time ever cash flow, and Enterprise Ireland got behind us and gave us 10 job grants. I'm going to say early 14, and said, right, you guys are going into the UK. If you do, we'll support you with 10 roles. And basically you have to hire the person and you get a payment the day they start and a payment at the end of 12 months. And it was, you know, 12 grand per person or something at the time. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to go for it here. So I hired, I was only intending to hire 3 or 4 people when I met Enterprise Ireland. And then they were like, we can give you a grant for 10.
How many did you have at the time? Many people?
Oh, we probably had 12, maybe, you know.
Okay, so effectively Dublin.
Like. Dublin, yeah. So I was like, all right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to just hire, build capacity. And my logic was, at the time, you know, I was covering about a third of the salary. So I was getting kind of 3 months of runway for my first check per person.
Right. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, I can hire 3 people. And if one of them works out, they'll cover the cost of all 3. And that's all I needed to do. So I just went hiring, and then we had loads of capacity, and then other companies didn't have the capacity. And then we opened an office in Liverpool Street in London, started going across.
Oh, nice.
Customers, yeah. Now, when I say open an office, it was a desk, right?
Still, no one knows that. Liverpool Street, just have that as your address. Like, oh, okay, yeah, I know where that is.
They do now. and ultimately, that started this kind of expansion piece. Then in we got to maybe 22, 23 people, 3.5 or 4 million. And
what were you doing for companies at that time?
Same as we are now.
Same,
you know,
thing.
Now, obviously, the if we look at what we do an awful lot more now.
Yeah.
I mean, security is, you know, wasn't a big thing back then. It is obviously a huge part of it now. You know, we've widened our product set.
What was the bread and butter back then? What were you kind of like, what was the main thing you were selling?
IT services. So ultimately support. And that is still the key of our business. So, like, I remember we signed the Talbot Hotel Group in 2007. And, you know, they're still a client today. And we're immensely proud of that. So that's 18 years ago. And, you know, so I would have even been calling out to the Talbot and Stillorgan at 9 o'clock at night, because the room key system wasn't actually opening doors.
Just the red all the time.
Exactly, yeah. And you know, and at the end of the day, those are the things you did. We also signed Avalon Aerospace in 2010, Donald Slattery's business. And, you know, that was amazing and such an exciting time, right? They were, I remember we met them. We had no concept of how big it was going to get. They did, to be fair to them. And I remember actually sitting in a meeting going, actually, this is a really cool business. They bought 3 laptops off us for the first 3 people. And I remember going and going, this is going to be cool. I wonder, could I invest in it? Now, by the way, I was thinking like 5 grand, maybe, if I could scrape it together. And I said, look, are you taking on investment? And they said, yes, we are. And I was like, oh, great. Okay. You know, wouldn't mind telling you. They said, well, actually, we have 2 categories. And I was like, you know, more than 10 million. And then you could be an individual, or less than 10 million. You go in as part of a fund. And I was like, I'm going to put my wallet back in my pocket. Like,
you're writing out the check, 500. Full stop.
Yeah, yeah. So, but Avalon took off, and I mean, we went all around the world. We did their acquisition of a company in HCAC when they bought them in Hong Kong. We went to the US when they bought the biggest acquisition, I think, ever in Ireland still. And we went out and we moved 250 people from overnight from one network to another. A lot of planning went into it, from 250 new laptops and phones and iPads.
So anything IT related? Anything because I think a lot of people don't fully understand this. And to be honest, I probably haven't in the past either, is that how companies manage their IT. You kind of just assume, oh, they just do it in-house or whatever. But like they'll come to you and go, look, everything IT. Just everything is just handle all that over there.
Yeah. So like I think where we generally meet people is we meet a CEO or a CFO of a company. And let's say, you know, anything, we've 1,000 customers, average is probably 75 seats, biggest is 2,500, smallest is probably 7 people, and everything in between. And we love all size companies. But typically what happens is a business owner will come to me and say, complete relationship breakdown with our IT department. We've had outage after outage, or we've had a cyber attack, or we've, you know, or I don't have confidence, or I'm being asked to spend all this money and I just don't understand it. And one of the challenges is if you put an engineer into an organization and you don't consistently train them, then their knowledge will stay as it was the day they joined you. So if they're with you for 10 years and you've never invested in, they only know 10-year-old technology.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. That's just something you don't think about.
And 10-year-old tech is very little use to a company in today's terms, like much less than it even was a year ago. So what we do is we step in and we say to the business, first of all, we audit what they have. We see, you know, here's all the tech you have, here's the security you have, here's your backups. And we're often going to people in the middle of an audit and say, are you aware that you've no proper backup of your IT system? If you had a cyber attack tomorrow, you would have to pay a ransom, and that ransom could be in the millions. You need a cloud offsite backup. And like one piece of advice to any business owner, make sure you have an immutable cloud offsite backup and make sure you're paying an appropriate price for it. So if somebody tells you in IT that you have an offsite backup and it's costing you 50 quid a month, I can tell you it will not satisfy a cyber attack, right? As what you want is all your data out of your building that your team can't even touch to damage it.
So what is this? This is like a replica of all your data, all your stuff in like a, like essentially the old school would have been you'd put your valuables into like a safety deposit box.
Yeah.
It's so, like a digital safety deposit box for everything.
Yeah. So you can almost imagine you take your data, you hand it to another organization, right? There are loads of big companies out there and like IT companies provide these as services, but not through themselves directly. But let's say, you know, we use a business called Datto Global Organization. They basically take all your data, they mine it. You don't have access to it. You can copy it, but you can't delete it, right?
Okay.
So in the event of a cyber attack, nobody can get to that data to damage it. Yeah. So therefore, they can wipe all your data and we just take it back from the backup and get your backup and run.
Sounds so logical, but I've never thought of that.
Yeah, it's critical. It is the one thing that has saved so many companies.
How many companies do you reckon have that?
In Ireland? Yeah. Less than 10%. Yeah.
I can just hear the people using ChatGPT now going, do we have?
But I would say a lot of companies think they have it and they don't.
Okay. And so they think they have the cheap solution you talked about there.
Yeah. So as an example, right? So companies, so let's say even medium-sized companies, and often medium-sized companies say, I'll have all my servers and I'm going to replicate them into my other office because I have an office in Dublin and I have a second office in an office in Dublin City and I have an office in Clonshock. So I'm going to put servers in both and replicate them.
Right.
Now, what's the cyber attack? You wipe the data. Replica means it's wiped on the other side instantly. If it's done properly, it's as in if you set it up properly, its purpose is to replicate data. Mm. So if you delete the data on one side, it's gone from the other side. If you infect it with a virus on one side, it's infected on the other side. That is not an offsite copy of your data. So the key thing is immutable in technology terms means the other side can't get to it. And I can tell you, if the data is in your building only, it is not immutable. Doesn't matter what somebody says, it is not immutable. It can be got to, it can be wiped, you can be held a ransom.
This is wild because we hear about cyber attacks all the time and it almost becomes this thing you read about and you're like, oh yeah, cyber attack. And it's almost like it kind of washes over us. Like, why, obviously businesses do when it happens, but why do people not take this more seriously? Like, why is this the kind of like one of those like, oh yeah, that, you know, it happens to other people kind of thing.
It is a hidden world, right? So the attacks are hidden. In fact, there was a person arrested and charged in the last couple of days. and a wealthy person's son in the US. Pictures of him all over the internet at the moment. And, you know, he's a 21-year-old that, you know, attacked two different organizations in the US, right? But from a well-to-do family, dressed in a suit, you know, boy next door type of look about him. So first of all, the cyber criminals are not who you think they are, right? They're not all, you know, dangerous people. They're a lot of them are just tech geeks who are getting into this space. And it's too easy. It's at this moment, it's too easy to do it. So that's a challenge. In terms of companies who get attacked, you know, and if you think about it, and, you know, people who are on listening and think about it, if you had a cyber attack today and all your data was encrypted and your whole organization was down for 4 or 5 days, what is the first thought that comes to your mind? And the reality is, how do I not let my customers know this has happened?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge, right? You now have to report to the Data Protection Commissioner in most instances. There are companies who still don't want to do that. Now, the majority will, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily public. It's only the big ones we hear about. This is a really common thing. This is happening every single day in this city to different organizations. And every time they don't want to, you know, we're brought in under an NDA. We're not allowed to say it to anyone and help get us back up. The story told to staff is often different. You don't want to be in that position. And what I would say is, as long as it's a shame to have a cyber attack, it's a problem. If somebody has a shop in Grafton Street and somebody comes along with a baton and knocks down the front window and takes all the clothes out and inside, nobody's embarrassed about it. The shop owner might even be on the news going, this is happening, it's terrible, yeah, or whatever. But if somebody breaks in over the internet connection and steals all the data from the same shop, nobody wants to know because it is frowned upon.
It's one of those kind of like hidden crimes. So it's not as visceral or as real, like you say there. But like, surely in today's world where very few things are secret, surely it's getting very hard to hide stuff like this. Because surely you're going to your favorite website and you're like, oh, that's weird, it's down. People's, you know, go on social media really fast and I go, oh, so-and-so companies can't buy off their website today. I wonder what's happening. Surely it kind of like people put two and two together very quick.
Yeah, and that's in the, but those ones come to light. But most, I mean, if you think of majority of organizations don't have public facing.
Okay, customer, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And also most websites are not hosted in companies in business offices, which they shouldn't be. So really what I'd say is the risk is around organizations that don't really understand the challenge that actually lies ahead. And one of the challenges that I have is every time we're sitting in a meeting with somebody under cyber attack, it's the first time they've been there. We've been here loads of times. It's the first time they've been there. And quite often, unfortunately, they have been told by us, by other people, here are the risks that you have, right? And they're going, look, I'll do that next January. I'll do that in February, right? What I would say is if you have a server that's Windows 2008 or Windows 2012, you need to get that out of your business right now. Somebody breaks in, they can use that as a conduit to take your whole system out. Like the simplicity of the challenge and the simplicity, the way people are able to buy these. So you can buy a kit, a ransomware kit, for $200 on the dark web, and it will literally give you an AI bot that will help you break into organizations. And you become a cyber criminal overnight. Could be a good side hustle.
There you go. I was going to ask you later, what do you do starting from zero in 2025? Become a cyber criminal.
Yeah.
This is an unendorsement, kids. Don't become a cyber criminal. All the usual terms and conditions apply. But like, this is fascinating because people don't chat about this. I'm genuinely so curious because, like, you know, I was reading the Marks & Spencer cyber attack. They're recently costing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions.
Yeah, and we, you know, the one thing I'd say is we have to get this story back to an Irish level. And I've been trying to get the IT companies in Ireland to come together to actually share our own data so we can have Irish data. So if you look at the average, if you go into ChatGPT, the average cyber attack in Ireland is 4.2 million. It's absolutely not, right? That's a global average. I would say the average cyber attack in Ireland is probably €250,000.
What you mean? Like €250,000, is that the cost to get it back or is that how much you lose or what?
Yeah, so like, let's just say company, 50 employees, cyber attack, right? The likelihood is every single PC that they have has to be rebuilt. Call it 2 hours a PC. It's 100 hours of time. That's probably going to be between 12 and 15,000 euros minimum. That's assuming that we get all their data back. Let's assume we don't get all their data back off those devices, and then we're in a scenario where now they have to find their data and there could be another couple of hundred hours to get that back. The server infrastructure, if they have a backup, you can recover it probably in 8 to 12 hours. Again, company of that size. If they don't have a immutable backup, you're then into figuring out how you can't get... This isn't something you're going to crack a password. So you have to decide, are you going to pay a ransom or not? And ultimately, your decision might be, am I going to close my business or am I going to pay a ransom? And then it's into a negotiation. And that negotiation could be 25 grand, 50, 75, 100, 200, 400, a million. If they know who you are, it'll be proportional to your wealth.
Right. Break this down for me, right? We're going to do a cyber attack. Relax.
Go for it.
We're not going to do a cyber attack right now. But give us an example, right? Let's just say, right, me and you have a business, 10 people. We do what? Pick an industry that's kind of commonly attacked.
Well, let's take a manufacturing company.
Perfect, right? We have a manufacturing company, 10 to 20 people. We come in today, right? We're rocking in, me and you having a coffee. We're coming into the office. What happens? Like, how do we know we've been attacked? Like, what's the, like, who, like, okay. You know, a lad with balaclavas and sitting there going, yeah, bad news, lads. So how do we know?
Okay, so first thing, you go in, you'll turn on your PC and it will pop up with a message. You have been attacked. Please contact this number. Log on to the dark web. Download a Tor browser and let's start our negotiation.
What?
Yeah.
So it's this screenshot. As simple as that of just like, you know, it's like the movies for like, you know, the James Bond movie where the thing pops up.
Oh, yeah.
The criminal has.
That's it.
That's real.
Yeah, yeah. And even how, by the way, this is mad, right? So recently they've actually started advertising on it. If you'd like to join our organization, you can make between 10 and 40,000 a day. So yeah, if somebody goes on and actually just goes and Googles the ransomware attack screen, they'll actually see hundreds of examples. So now you see it.
So our editor will put up a screenshot of that. 3, 2, 1. Now. There we go. So now people can see what we're talking about. Because this is so interesting because it is so hidden.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting to break this down in real terms. So if you're sitting there now starting to sweat in your manufacturing company in Nina, you're kind of going, right,
yeah,
what's going to happen next, lads?
So now all your staff see it. So that's an issue.
So the lads you're in early, everyone's trailing in now, kind of logging on to ship the things off to wherever, Waterford.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh.
So the first thing you have is you've got a huge HR issue to deal with. Because now no one can work, and we'll get into that in a sec. But now you have some people in your team always who said, I told you.
Shut up, Philip. Not now. Yeah. Now is not the time to be that guy.
You should have signed off on the 399 euros a month backup that we said. And we should have bought a new firewall 6 months ago. And waiting until January was a bad idea. And our ERP system should have been upgraded 9 months ago and you haven't done it. So there's a lot of heat that comes back to the business owners, right? So we're going to get some heat, and we own this company, so we're getting some heat. Next up, so no one can do anything. You don't know where you're shipping your orders to. You don't know who's ordering. You don't know who owes you money. So your accounts people can't do anything. Your reception people, most likely, depending on your phone system, okay, let's say their phone system is operational. But let's say you're on a voice over IP phone system, which you most likely are today. The very first thing that the IT provider has to do is cut your internet connection because somebody's in your building. So we cut your internet, so they're out.
Right.
Now we found out how to get in. We close the hole. Then you can open it up.
Okay. So you have to put literally a seal around the building. So you have to cut everything.
Cut your internet. And so there's no external access. And then we search for how to get in. So at the moment, the big thing is they're breaking in through VPNs. So SSL, VPN, and all these different VPN technologies are being compromised. True VPNs, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So they've compromised loads of them. So over the last 2 years, almost all the firewall manufacturers have had compromised VPNs, and they're able to find ways of breaking through them. So then they get into your site, so now they're inside your building, and then they look around and they go, Windows 2008 server, I'm going to log on there, and they can get into the Windows 2008 server with an AI kit, get all the passwords that you've ever typed into that. So now they have your admin password. Then they log on to your main server because they have your password. Then they look at, where's your backup? Right, so hang on, you have an immutable backup. Damn it. Okay, so what are my options here? So maybe I'm going to run a crypto mining on your machine and just leave that running for a couple of months, or and you won't even know about it. Or maybe I'm going to take your data now because you've got a backup, and now I'm going to send you a message and I have your data, I'm going to publish it, unless you actually tell me. So here's all the companies and here's all your staff and here's your payroll files and here's your whatever.
Okay.
Yeah. So then, you know, or else I'm going to send all of the staff all of the HR documentation for every employee.
Really?
Right. So it's whatever, I mean, they're looking for their angle. How am I going to get paid?
So they're kind of, they're using the human psychology element. This is the bit I couldn't really understand. I was like, how do they force people? But like, they're using the human psychology element of like, what's going to happen? What's the outcome going to be here?
Yeah, but the most common thing that happens is they realize, hang on, your backup is over here. So first thing, I'm going to take your backup, select all, encrypt. Backup is now encrypted.
Right.
And then they encrypt your servers. So then you come in and you go, right, our whole network's been encrypted. And IT go, don't worry, we have a backup. They look, backup is gone because it's not immutable and they can get to it and it's in your building or accessible by. So now you're in a scenario where you go, okay, well, we have to work out how we're going to go because I don't know who's ordered anything. I don't know who owes me money. I don't know what money I owe to people. It's all tied up in this. So how do you even rebuild it? And then you have to go, am I going to do it with trust? If you were a company with 50 employees and 40 suppliers and 1,800 customers, that's just not a manageable scenario. So you need to get your data back. So we're then going, what are the critical systems? Where do they currently exist? How are we going to get you back? And then our objective is going, right, okay, we need what the cash position of the company like. So we were collecting, you know, let's say 50 grand a day was coming in. And now we've no way of knowing what people are owing. Invoices are going to stop flowing out. Our cash position is 100 grand and I payroll in 4 days and I need to collect 300. So, okay, what are my options now? So we need to get your finance system back quickly. So where's your finance system? Okay, well, it's gone and back. Okay, we need to get straight on and figure out how we get a decryption key. So we got to negotiate with these guys.
Okay, so that's what happens next, right? If that's gone, that's gone. Yeah. Right, you've no alternative here but negotiate. And how are they, this is something I always wondered, is how are they picking a figure? How are they saying to Kevin and Gary going, lads, it's going to be 150 grand to get that back?
So if they know who you are, and this is the thing, right? So I'm talking like a human is doing it, and that does happen. But actually, quite often, this is all automated. So they've just sent out emails and they've done all this and all these other things are happening in the background. And then the technology goes, if I get through here, try this, try that, try the other.
So there's running programs.
Running scripts.
Wow.
So therefore, you could be encrypted and they have no idea who you are. So the first thing you do is, you know, you create a persona of an organization that's not necessarily yours, that will look a lot smaller than it is. And then you communicate through that mechanism. So you're trying to build a picture that it's not the scale that it actually is. And then you can have a conversation. But if they discover who you are, then it's a much different conversation.
So how does it even work though, the first conversation? Like, because let's say they break into me and you and we're doing 10 million a year, we're doing okay. But then they break into Ben's over here and Ben's doing 50 million a year, or 100 million a year. How are they figuring out, like, oh, it's going to be 100 grand, or it's going to be 200 grand, it's going to be a million? Like, what are they using to figure that out? Or are they just kind of going, it's 100 grand?
So there's kind of some base. So if they don't know, they basically it's about 10 grand a server, 3.5 grand a PC. That's the typical recovery rate that they're starting with.
Right.
But as a small business, that's, it could be 152 grand. You may not have it.
Jesus, right.
So you have to kind of work back. And look, at the end of the day, sadly, they are a business. And you know, are they better off getting 25 grand off you or getting nothing off you rather than getting 400 grand? But what they don't want is a scenario that they get 25 grand off you and they could have got 2 million.
So what do they do? They'll do some checks? They'll kind of dig into your finances? What will they do?
You can share whatever you want. I mean, if they don't know who you are, all you're looking for is a password. So you don't have to give that up. You have to give up who you are, but it doesn't have to be who you actually are.
All right.
So it's a game.
Okay.
It's a game. And so it's not a fun one. Look, and what I would say, this is the thing we hate being involved in. It's absolutely horrible. Everyone is stressed. It's a horrible place. You've got people, you've got business owners who, you know, often don't sleep for 5 days. They're in the office 24/7. We've people with them. We've got, you know, we're trying to recover all this. The stress on the ground is horrible.
This brinksmanship to see how far you can push it, not get caught out.
Yeah. So what you need to do, and what I advise everyone is, you know, paying the ransom is preventable. Immutable backup. If you don't have it in a business, if you ask me to be a director of your company, first question I ask, Have you an immutable backup? If you don't, I'm not being a director of your company. I don't want the association.
Right.
You have to have it. And it's so cheap. As in, it's hundreds of euros for small companies and thousands for big companies who can afford it. It's never an insurmountable amount of money. And it's always a 0.001% of a cyber attack.
And what then is the typical outcome of a cyber attack? Like, is there kind of like it follows, and you've probably kind of outlined it there in your answers, but is there kind of like a typical outcome in terms of like it takes this many days and 9 times out of 10 you get your data back? Or how does it work?
So I'll tell you. So with backup, with immutable backup, you're probably looking at 5 days to 3 weeks.
Whoa. Even with the backup?
Yeah. Yeah. And sorry, that's to get back crawling, right? Running 2 to 3 months.
Jesus.
Yeah. Huge level of work. And you see, you're dealing with the Data Protection Commission. You have a huge amount of stakeholders to keep informed. You've banking requirements often to inform them of a scenario. There's a huge amount that comes out of it. And people, the learnings that people have in a cyber attack is always, you know, there's 100 aha moments in the journey, which nobody wants in that.
Too late now.
Without backup, I would say it's 3 weeks, best case maybe, because your negotiation and conversations, you could be waiting 2 days for a reply. And that's weeks to a crawl, and then probably months, if ever, to full recovery.
So what happens here, Kevin? Do companies ever go to the wall?
Absolutely, yeah. Now, to be fair, we haven't directly experienced it, but I know companies who have gone to the wall, and globally.
They're not work reduced, obviously. They're the ones that end up then because they don't have a plan or they don't have a Kevin or whatever.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, sometimes there's a lot of luck in it. I mean, I remember at one point we had again, in the early days of ransomware attacks, we had a ransomware attack in a client, and this is very early. I mean, I'm going back 11 years ago now. And I remember there's a thing on servers called shadow copy, which is basically snapshots that are taken every couple of minutes. And we were able to go in and recover from the shadow copy, but they didn't have an offsite backup. And the guys had taken the backup, they just missed that one piece. They never missed that anymore, unfortunately.
Mm. Right. So they've got more savvy as things have got better.
Sometimes there's luck. In a global scenario, it's a real challenge for people to recover from a customer point of view and a staff point of view. So we have seen staff attrition go up in a cyber attack. People lose confidence in their employer somewhat.
Really?
Yeah.
So after a cyber attack, staff will get the wobbles about maybe this isn't the best place to be working?
Yeah, it's not. I'm not talking mass walkout, but sometimes you can lose critical people. And it's such a pressure point for such an amount of people. So if you have a 3 week cyber attack, right, and you're dealing with it for 3 weeks to get you back up and running safely, you know, your senior leadership team have 3 weeks without sleep, and particularly where they have advised the business to do something that hasn't done.
Right.
It's an unnecessary thing. Also, people take personal responsibility, and sometimes people resign because they're like, you know what, it was my fault. I was given the advice. I didn't pass it on. Didn't think we should do it. So
they fall on their sword metaphorically in a boardroom speaking.
And then you have the embarrassment of it. You have the, you know, you have all of the other things, and it's and you know what I would say again. There's a lot of tools out there to prevent, but there's nothing that's foolproof anymore. I mean, you know, we've seen customers with really good security, and all of a sudden a vendor lets them down. You have a supplier of a piece of hardware, and the hardware has a flaw. They exploit that flaw, they're in, and all of a sudden you're in trouble again.
You should give me the heebie-jeebies here.
Yeah. Offsite backup and you're fine.
But okay, what should normal people be doing? Like, even if they're small businesses, like, or even just on a personal basis, what are the kind of like the kind of to-dos that you're like, right, you have to do this as a normal person, even just on your own personal laptop, or if you're a founder, like just with yourself, what should you be doing?
You probably guess it.
Hypothetically speaking, from a friend, right?
Offsite immutable backup.
Right. So I would say even for me, right? Yeah, Let's say me, for example, I'm like one person business and I have 4 or 5 contractors work with me.
Yeah.
Like what should I be doing?
So what I would say is I would make sure all your data is stored. So for instance, one person, do you use OneDrive or Google, or what do you use?
Google, yeah.
Google, okay. So Google, So Google themselves back up your data to a point, but if somebody goes in and changes all your data has all been changed. There's percentages of which they don't recover. So get an external backup of your Google
Do you mean like an external hard drive, or do you mean like just an external company?
There's companies that do it. And like, these aren't expensive. I would, at a guess, right, I'm going to say 5 or 6 euros a month, and you have your system backed up. So therefore, if you have an attack, your backup is in a separate location and you can recover.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. Secondly, I'd say, you know, one of the challenges that we've had with customers over the years is you go in, you go, right, okay, here's the 17 things you need to do in IT security. And they're going, okay, I'll do 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, right? I'm going to do 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 next year. And then do the other ones the year after. And I get that, right? So we turned around about 2 years ago and we came up with a product. We basically said, we'll take all the things you need as a base level. We called it Nostra Cloud Shield, and we sell it to customers. And we've got 3 flavors of it, kind of a light, medium, and high end. And it's like 15 quid, 20 quid, and 30
quid. So they don't have to think about it. No, they don't have to make
that,
the list.
And that gives them all the things that they need
Gotcha.
To kind of cover the user. And then from a network and server point of view, you know, one of the things, I would say people have to consider is, in the event of a crisis and your IT switched off, how do you get product out the door? Right. And this is not an IT thing. I think a senior leadership team could sit down in 10 minutes. What are our critical systems if all our systems are turned off? What do we want to get back first? Where is it? And is it vulnerable? So if you have a SaaS, you know, SaaS cloud-based accounting package like Xero, right? As long as you have a 2-factor authentication on it and it's set up properly, you're at relatively small risk. So even if your whole business is taken out, you still have your accounts package. So now that's the number one most important. What's my next most important? Where is it? Is it vulnerable? And it's not, and the reason I'm saying it's not a technology thing, because the business has to decide what's most important. Then you can either know where it is or not, and then you need to ask somebody if it's secure or not in this current location. And then, where's my backup of it? And, you know, what I would say is, if you're doing anything with hard drives or backup to hard drive, you know, the reason that they don't work is because for your backup on the hard drive to be accurate, it has to be physically connected all the time, because if you change a document now, unless the drive is connected, it's not there. So it's always old from the second you plug it out. And then it's also dependent on people. And any security process you depend on people will fail, because you go on holidays for 2 weeks, you do go away, you leave the hard drive in the boot of a car and you don't do it, and all of a sudden the drive breaks and you wait on a new one, which takes 3 weeks. You have to automate security. Yeah. And when it's automated, it's consistent. When it's consistent, you're far more secure.
So talk to me then about your vision, right? We started a vision, we're going to end on vision. How do you go from here? What year is the celebration again? I need to put in my Google
2050.
Calendar. 2050, right? I'll see if Google Calendar goes that far. Right, when we're getting to 2050, right? What's your next kind of like 4, 5, 6, 7 years looking like?
So, you know, we bought 10 companies so far in our business. So we bought about, call it, you know, 50 million euros last year in revenue. We bought about 20 million euros of revenue across 10 companies. So average 2 million, biggest one, 5 million, smallest one, probably 800 grand.
So you bought 10 companies? 10 over how long?
So we bought 2015, 2018, 2020, 21, took 22 off. And then I did 6 between middle of 23 and middle of 24. So every 2 months for a year.
Jesus.
Yeah.
It's a business in itself.
It is a business in itself.
You're like an M&A house over here.
Yeah. Too many, by the way. But as in, they all worked out, but we put way too much pressure on our internal people. So we've effectively taken the last year to get all our structures and everything built now for the new scale we are. And we're now back buying again. So, you know, so for me, it's about geography. So we're looking for people, product, and geography. So when I'm buying a business, I'm going, okay, so first of all, where are we not that we can serve? So we opened in Belfast recently. So that's newest market where, you know, we will open somewhere in the Midlands or acquire a business somewhere in the Midlands. And then that'll complete Ireland. So we'll have Dublin, Cork, Belfast, Midlands. And that'll give us kind of good coverage everywhere. And then we will continue to acquire in Ireland and bring customers. And so we'll buy a business and we'll integrate them into one of those 5 offices. Really, for me, it's about then increasing geography. So, you know, UK is next big place. So we're across next Tuesday with a business that we're in final stage of bidding on. And we'll go big for the first deal in the UK. And we're looking for a business. So we'll go into a city. We'll buy a couple of companies in that city. We'll consolidate them down.
Right.
and we'll get the efficiencies within the city, and then we'll move to the next one. And that's what we've done here really well. And our objective really is to build, you know, Europe's, in the short term, so next 5 years, Europe's largest IT outsourcing provider with security as the backbone, where ultimately we can just help a company not have IT on the daily agenda of the SLT going, right, guys, you know, IT has blocked us getting product out this week or whatever, or security issues. So we are where we're winning is when those meetings don't discuss IT because it's handled. And you know, in terms of product, we're looking at things like, should we add accounting and ERP into our product set? If we do that, we'll do it through an acquisition and then widen the products, which we'll actually deliver to our customers. So over the next 5 years, we'll probably buy another 10 companies. We'll get to $250 million in revenue. We'll grow to being in excess of 1,000 people. And hopefully I'll keep all my hair and it won't go too grey too quick.
Well, if you keep working out every day and keep doing the meditation, I think you're off to a strong start. Like, but it's those fundamentals that people often overlook because, and I've heard it so many times, it's really interesting. I'd be keen to get your take on it before we move on to our quick fire round, is like, people see it as an either or situation, which I find quite bizarre. Oh, it, you know, it's easy for you to work out because of this, or I'll enjoy myself a bit more because of that. And, you know, is it that, is it a lack of awareness, laziness? What is it that stops people from actually tapping into that, the body, the brain side of things? Because I actually haven't been able to figure that out.
So for me, it's about, you know, if you know where you're going, it ties back to the vision. If you know where you're going, so I want to be Ireland's biggest company in the next, whatever, 25 years, right? So to do that, we have an awful lot of work to do. And to do that, we have to have big success, right? So it for me, it's about daily pieces. I was down in Galway last night. I did Leadership for Growth course a couple of years ago. Our cohort meeting was last night. We have a great cohort. And we all went out with an afternoon session where we helped each other on each other's businesses. And then we went out last night in Galway, right? And I drank zero zeros for the evening and was in bed at midnight. And I did that because I've big day on today. I had a meeting in Galway first thing this morning with a great company, actually really cool business that I met. And then up here with you. And I've
big podcast in the afternoon, big company in the morning, big podcast in the afternoon.
Exactly.
What a day.
Yeah. And then tomorrow I've got my 11-year-old is having all his friends over for a party at the house. Class. So we've bouncy castles coming in the morning and everything. So, you know, like for me, it's about priorities. So first of all, I prioritize. I could have went down. I could have easily stayed out till 2 a.m. I could have had, you know, a couple of drinks, 5 or 6 pints. And then this morning, woke up with a bit of a groggy head. And I would have been at 6 out of 10 for today. Right. So for me, first of all, it's about discipline. Secondly, you know, if I wake up in the morning and I'm talking about hoop for a sec, if I'm in red in the hoop, right, I will find an hour during the day to get some sleep.
Okay.
I will, you know, for me, I think you have to prioritize what's important. And I prioritize what's important, right? And, you know, like for him's sake, I hugely believe in doing what you're really good at. And I believe in not doing what you're not good at, right? So I'm not a believer in work on your weakness. I'm a believer outsource your weakness, find somebody in your business, hire somebody to do it and work, right? And I have a really big work rate. But when I get home at night, I want to spend time with my kids, right? And then what are the things that I need to do to achieve that? So I actually have a driver, right? And I have a driver.
Now that makes sense.
So I have a driver because I can get work done during the day. That means I can get time at home with my wife and kids. And that's important.
They're the practical examples that I love hearing.
Yeah.
Because people kind of will not tell you those things because that makes total sense. Yeah. You're driving from Galway to here. That's a long bloody time.
Yeah.
That's a lot of mental energy drained out of you. You got a ton of work done, I'm sure, between Galway and here.
Yeah. And you know, Jer drove or got the train down from Dublin to Galway this morning and drove back. I got 2.5 hours work done in the car and we had a couple of meetings in Galway this morning. So I probably got 3.5 hours work done in the car today. I would have got zero done if I had to come back. And if I had done that, I would have been working all evening. And like, you know, even if you think of the cost of that, right, the cost of having somebody to do that is far less than the value you get out of from your time, right? And I hired a driver first back in 2012 when I had no money because I couldn't afford an account manager, right? Because an account manager is going to cost me like 70 grand. I didn't have any money. So I was like, if I hire a driver, they will cost me a lot less than that. I can afford a driver, and then I can do my CEO work in, for 4 hours, and I can do, and he can just drive me from customer to customer, and between them I can do my job. And that was allowed me to get a, an account manager for the cost of a driver. And actually,
you kept the biggest secret to the end. That's genius.
Yeah.
But they're the kind of things I love. Yeah. I follow this guy in the US, Dan Martell, and he wrote this book, Buy Back Your Time.
Yeah.
And it's all about that stuff. Mm. It's all about pushing, going, right, where's your, show me your calendar, show me your time blocks, what gives energy, what takes, I agree with you.
Yeah.
Outsource.
The only funny thing though is loads of people go, when did you lose your license?
I was like, I have it's such an Irish thing, yeah. Isn't it? Like,
I have no points on my license even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Because how could you?
Yeah.
But it's those strategic things. I think in Ireland, there's almost like a, it's actually, no, it's not in Ireland. I'm being unfair there. When you watch like some entrepreneurs or you chat to them and they're like, oh, I'm wrecked. I was in the office 11 o'clock last night. I don't see that as a badge of honor. I see that as someone who doesn't have their shit together. To me, that just screams, I'm a bit of a narcissist. I want everyone to look at me and see how hard I'm working. And you just don't, you clearly don't have kids you're prioritizing. And you're sending out the wrong signals to me. If they're doing that, I find it such a cliche. And you see, especially some content creators, I saw one last week and he was putting out this thing. Look, guys, it's 3 minutes to one. It's Monday night. I'm here in the office. Just, you know, working on my own. Look, there's no one here. I was like, piss off.
Yeah, I've never done that.
I hate that shit. Like, because it's propagating this hustle culture myth to younger founders who believe that equals productivity. The time equals productivity.
Yeah.
I'm more impressed by someone, it's Friday at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm out the gap here.
Yeah. No, and honestly, I'm not a believer in late working at all. Actually, I've never done it. I would say I've had 10 nights where I've worked past 6:30 in my life.
Love it.
And I'll get an email at 8 o'clock at night, and to be fair, I'll open my phone sometimes, I'll reply to it if it's important, right? But I mean, I would say I am out of the office most days at 5:30 at the latest. I get up, and again, for me, it's about getting up. So I make sure let's say Monday morning, Connor's at the house, 6 o'clock, doorbell rings. There he is. Okay. So I am up and I have to be ready. So it's too late. You know, if I had booked him for 7 and get up at 6, I would probably cancel him by 7. But he's at my house by the time I'm
But you've taken away that opportunity for the monkey brain to go,
yeah,
you're a bit tired today, aren't you?
Yeah.
Maybe let's just skip the workout or the run or whatever.
Yeah. And so he's there Monday, Ryan's there Tuesday. And then normally on a Wednesday, I meet somebody. So somebody from Nostra, like Darren or Barry or one of the guys or Anthony will come out and literally just pop out, meet at the house, and we'll go for a walk or a run or whatever.
Brilliant.
Yeah. And then Thursday, Ryan again, Friday, Connor, right? And that's my structure.
Structure, every discipline. Week. Yeah, you're speaking my language.
And then from there, every morning, 7 o'clock, so finish the gym, we go down for a coffee and mugs and docky and sit there, enjoy 20 minutes of absolute silence, bit of crack with the guys, and then back to the house, ready, and leave at 7:45 in the office at 10:10. And that's my day every day. And I think routine is probably the most important thing. And for me, I do a thing called default diary, which is basically I have loads of things set up in my diary that I need to do.
So Default diary.
So as an example, you can't meet a customer at 6, well, some customers, yeah, but you can't meet a customer at 6 o'clock in the morning, right? So, you know, if you want to go and have a coffee break, have your coffee break at 6 o'clock in the morning and put customers' meetings in from 10 till 12 and from 2 to 4. So, you know, you list out the diary. What are the times when I want to be customer facing or when I want to meet my team and put them all in? So, whereas I meet lots of people and they're writing proposals, you know, salespeople are writing proposals all day on a Monday and all day on a Tuesday. And then they're wondering why the customer can't meet them on a Friday afternoon, right? No, meet your customer on a Monday morning and a Monday afternoon and do your proposals on a Friday when no one wants to meet
you. Exactly. Reactive, they're reactive to things, not proactive. And they're not listening to human psychology like, just think about your week.
Yeah.
Think about your energy. Think about anybody's energy.
Yeah. And the big thing that I've done wrong as we scaled, particularly in the last year, is, you know, as we've had more people and you have more meeting requests and more things coming in, that saying no has been a real challenge for me, and I still have nowhere near perfected it. But actually, you know, in the first 4 or 5 months of this year, I literally had a lunch meeting every day. So I was going from 8 o'clock until 5 o'clock.
That's pretty draining.
And non-stop, including lunch. And give the guys in Sprout a shout out. They've been giving me lunch for the last 6 months and it's brilliant to get a healthy lunch.
Big fans of Sprout on the podcast.
Yeah. And I just go, so every day it's two lunches arrive in and it's me and whoever else I'm having a meeting with. And actually one of the things I'm trying to do now is go, no, I need my lunch back. I need my actually downtime because I'm going home exhausted and I'm not there as I would like to be.
I was going to ask you about that, like, because I find, like, if I'm on the go all day and I'm meeting, like, a lot of people, like, what do you do all month? Like, I meet a lot of people. I actually find it really draining. Like, I love this. I love chatting to you deep one-to-one, but if I have to go to a lot of group stuff, I find it very draining. And, like, by 5 o'clock, I just want to go home.
Yeah.
Just hang out with my daughter, not talk to anybody.
Yeah.
My wife is like, you're not listening to me again. I'm like, what? It's not that I'm being intentional. It's just my battery is just gone. Yeah. So how do you protect that? Like, do you have good boundaries? Like, you kind of give us a hint of it there. Like, you have good boundaries in place about, like, you when you clock off. But then during the day, like, how do you keep that energy?
So I would say certainly this year I've been the worst I've been in a long, long time. Mm. So I've done less meditations this year than in any year going back. And simply because, you know, I would have always met all my staff when we had 10 or 12 people every couple of days. Mm. And then as you're going up, you're kind of going, I'm meeting the management team. And now all of a sudden you have 40 people at managers and then you've got 8 in the senior leadership team and you got board and directors and you got customers who want to meet you and all of these other things. And then, and at the moment then you get loads of people who are going, look, can I meet you for an hour? And I was at a talk you were at and would you mind giving me half an hour? And I really love that. Genuine. I absolutely love it.
Don't say that. You're about to get bombarded. LinkedIn emails. Don't reach out to Kevin and ask him to go for a coffee. I had someone on a few weeks ago. I'll tell you who I was after. You'll know him. And he was like, geez, got a lot of requests from coffees after that podcast of yours. And I was like, well, then they're not regular listeners because they should know. I was like, if you're reaching out to someone busy, they don't want to meet you for coffee. But if you ask them a super specific question, you might get an answer.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. And again, it's the, I love it. But there's way too much of it, as in I just get a lot of it. And, you know, and also, like, you know, we as a business have a huge amount of customers and I have to give them time. And actually, I love that. And it's really important because, you know, I met a customer yesterday and they were kind of bringing me through some of the challenges that they have as an organization. And it's really making me think today, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it, going, actually, you know, how can actually, because recruitment is an issue, getting people. And I'm going, okay, well, actually, should we start going down and deep diving with them as an experiment to see, can we actually get AI and technology to soften the recruitment demand in their organization? And I actually don't know if we can solve that one or not, but I think we'd probably have a fair crack at it. And I love getting involved in those things. But one of the things that I know about myself is I love the exciting part of it. I have to put loads of people around me then to go, right, here's the solution. And then I'm the one who throws it over my shoulder and walks out the door and go, hey.
He's had another idea. Oh, no.
So, and actually there's a couple of us in the business now who are ideas people. And it's super stressful. It's there for lots of people around us.
I'd say so.
But also, in fairness, you know, I think people love getting challenges. And I think when you give somebody a challenge, they say, here's an issue, will you go and solve it?
How I'm going to get to our quick fire round in a minute, but I just kind of always like to ask people about underrated and overrated. When it comes to being a founder and being a leader in business now, as you've kind of grown and grown and grown, like, what are the key things that are massively overrated, overhyped, and what's massively underrated as a leader and a founder?
So I would say what is underrated is the freedom that it can give you. So, you know, freedom can be a scary thing, right? Because when you start a business and all of a sudden you're like, you've no customers, it's like, what do I do?
Too actually? Much freedom.
I know I said I was going to start this business, but I didn't realize I'd just sit here all day and actually, what do I do? Like, who do I even ring and speak to? So I think the freedom is a double-edged sword in that you have loads of freedom, but very few founders take it. So I think one of the big challenges people have is they don't switch off and they work 365 days a year And I think the question I'd say they need to ask is, what am I doing it for? You know, and I often speak to people who go, you know, my kids are all grown up now and I actually missed their childhood.
Makes me so sad.
Yeah.
It really makes me sad now after, you know, having my own daughter. It's just, I couldn't imagine, that'd be my ultimate nightmare.
Yeah.
Of she and the 18 and me kind of looking at her going, I don't know yet.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? I saw, I have a son who loves football and I try and make every training session and every match, and I'd say I make 90% of them, right? And occasionally I'm away. Like last night it was in Galway. But if you asked him, he'd say, I miss a lot of matches.
Right, yeah.
Because actually to him, it's really important.
Yeah.
So, you know, but you can't actually make them all. But I would say, you know, that, so those little things are, so I'd say freedom is both under and overrated, you could argue, but you know, certainly if you go, I'm done for the day and I'm going to go home, you have an ability to do that. And you also have an ability to go, you know, I'm going to actually take next week off and go away. And all of those little pieces. Obviously, you know, if you're a success, there's financial benefits and that's great, because what I would say it gives you, the main thing it gives you is comfort and confidence, and you know, to know that your family are going to be okay and to know that you're able to provide for them is obviously very rewarding and very important. So, you know, that's obviously critical. I think there is often a perception that it's all, you know, champagne and particularly on travel. You know, it's really interesting. I often meet people and they're like, God, like the must be great to be like traveling and doing all these trips and going away and everything else. And I'm a real homebird. I actually love being home. And I'm on the EOY alumni, the Entrepreneur of the Year. And I've been on that now for 7 or 8 years. And I love those trips, to be fair. And
they do look pretty cool. Yeah. I knew a good few on this year's trip. I knew a good few people on it.
Yeah.
And I was on Instagram and I was like, that looks class, to be fair. It looks like good crack.
Yeah. I know it is. And like, but it's serious enough. Like there's 6 days of executive content and, you know, you're meeting, you know, Sony Ventures, and you're meeting, you know, we met guys from Honda who had invented a new electric vehicle and they were kind of talking about it, and you're meeting all these incubation centers and, you know, you're like, it's sort of really, really amazing content on it. And so, but then at nighttime, you're getting to go out with people who at this stage, I've done seven, eight trips with them, and you know most of them, and they're, you know, there's a huge trust in that group.
It's the caliber as well, though. I think that I often think about that. That's why I grilled you the first minute I met you. I was like, how does that work? How does that group work? Because I think about putting groups together a lot, and I try like bring people together a lot. And it's a real art and science. And this, I think a lot of that is the caliber, because there's an entry.
Yeah.
You can't just buy a ticket and go along. This is invite only. This is curated.
Yeah.
It's huge power in that.
It is. And it's brilliant. But outside of that trip, I end up doing probably 3 trips a year, typically a week long, tech conferences. And, you know, those I go to them, I always get huge value out of them. But God, I wish I could fly home every night. Can't do it from Denver in Colorado or wherever it is, right? And they're great conferences.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you know, the travel isn't anything like what people think it is. So definitely that's an overrated thing for me.
Okay, I like it. Right, quick fire round.
Go for it.
What book, are we sitting up, there's going to be serious answers now.
Yeah.
What book has had made the biggest impact on you?
I should have done my research on that question, actually. So I am not an avid reader.
Okay.
I read a lot of, you know, I read the news and I do all that. So actually, I'll give you the book. So 2002... I went on holidays and I was in the airport and I bought Retire Young, Retire Rich, which is what I thought I wanted to do at the time, right? Robert Kiyosaki. And I flew on holidays, right? And where I went to didn't have mobile phone reception. This is 2002, so not everywhere did.
Yeah.
And it was no internet and it was in the Maldives and there was no TV. I kind of
didn't. Sounds like heaven.
Yeah. It does now. It didn't then. And I sat down and I was like, oh, shit, what am I going to do for the week?
Do for a week.
And I was like, okay, I bought this book. And I often buy books and don't read them, right? So anyway, I pick it up and I read it. And I read it over the course of probably 3 days. And there was loads of really good lessons in it. Like one of the things was, I remember, you know, I think it was doodads was how you called them. And it was basically stupid things you buy. And, you know, I had bought a couple of cars, and you know, I effectively had all of my net worth tied up in like three cars, and I was 22, and I came back and sold them all, and I started buying property, and that property ultimately allowed me to set up Nostra, and it was about understanding wealth and money, and buying assets, not liabilities, and that was a real eye opener for me at that time. I haven't reread the book actually in about 25 years, but if you want one that I found was fascinating, and I see so many people spending all of their money, and you know, they get a pay increase and they're going to spend more money, and
the cost of living creeps up. Another holiday gets a little bit better, and then it just goes up and up.
And I'm trying to speak to my daughter at the moment, who's 18, about investing the money that she's making, and you know, and in my opinion, people will disagree, handbags are not investments.
Depends on the handbag.
It depends on the handbag.
The guy's a luxury exchange, and to debate that strongly with you. Depends on the handbag.
Well, she's probably a very good investor, a savvy investor.
Well, I'll connect her with CAD and luxury exchange. Yeah. They'll get on well.
So I'd love to, I think if people actually understood money and the power of it and the compounding element of it, and if you're 18 and you can do a couple of investments, in reality, 10% of what you invest in 28, as 18 years of age, when you're 40, you'd have to invest 10 times that amount to be able to get the same return at retirement. So I think money...
unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I did this. I'm doing it now, actually. I do all these little mini experiments throughout the year, and I document them. And the one is the compounding experiment, a tenner a day into shares and crypto.
Okay.
I wish I'd done that when I was 18.
Yeah.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Which is higher at the moment, by the way.
I'll tell you right now. I'll ask you the next question. I'll look it up while you're answering. What's your superpower?
That's a good question. So I would say my superpower is I know my flaws. I know loads of people around me are going to go, I can give you a list of ones that you're not aware of, but actually I know my flaws, and I understand what I'm bad at. I don't have a good memory. I'm not structured and organized, so I have to be really disciplined about being structured and organized. And if you ask me to do something and I don't write it down, it's never getting done.
I think me and you might be related somehow. Yeah. Like if it isn't in here or in the Google Calendar,
it is gone. I don't have an attention span unless it's something I'm really interested in. I probably have ADHD and a whole load of other things. And, so for me, I would say I love people. I love spending time with people. I love listening to people. I love business. I love all of that, and I put my energy and effort into what I'm good at, what I love, and I get other people to do all the shit that I hate. Excuse my language.
Secret to success, I think, as a leader.
Yeah.
Which do you reckon is higher? So I put a tenner a day every day since September 1st. I was on holidays last year and I dreamt this up. I was sitting in Marbella and I was like, Michelle, idea for a new experiment. Tenner a day. So tenner in crypto, Bitcoin only, and then tenner in shares.
I'm trying to work out the math of the Trump tariffs here.
Yeah.
I am going to say... Oh, sorry. How did you pick your cryptos?
Just Bitcoin.
Yeah. Okay. I would say, at a guess, your crypto is higher. But I would also say I am not suggesting that is the right path for people. I'm actually...
Oh, this is not financial. I always have to say this. This is not financial advice.
Can I say something on crypto?
Go on.
I hate it. And I tell you why.
No, but you're going to hate this in a minute when I tell you the return.
Well, I don't... It's not about the return. I have to go back to what life is all about, right? The only point I have practically seen cryptocurrency being used, I had a CEO in tears. And every time, the only function I have personally witnessed...
To pay the ransomware.
Pay ransomware.
There you go, yeah.
And I think if crypto did not exist, neither would ransomware, because the payment wouldn't be possible, and the two are intrinsically linked. And I would also
tell you... That's interesting, actually.
And I would also say the statistics that are published globally on the amount of crypto, I think it's like 4% of crypto transactions are ransomware. I would say that's totally underestimated, because the majority of ransomware are small company. The majority is not reported. The majority is not followed. And for that reason, I really dislike it.
That's a really good point. Usually people are like, oh, I don't like it because it makes sense. That's really an argument. That actually makes a lot of logical sense.
Yeah.
Crypto's up 26%.
Yeah.
Shares are up 3%.
Yeah. And again, if you did that the same period, the 12 months earlier, it would have been a slightly different result. But what
you know what was really interesting? They were actually trading level.
Yeah.
They were kind of like, they were ebbing and flowing and ebbing and flowing until all the Trump stuff kicked off.
Yeah.
And then shares just started going way down. It's probably skewed slightly. Crypto is, a mate of mine's a massive crypto investor.
Yeah.
He's like, if you want to get overexcited, go log into your Coinbase. Mm. I was like, no, I'm working. I don't want to get distracted. Yeah. It's just having a hot day as well.
And you can look, and what I would say is, again, going back to my thing, I want to make money out of things to make the world a better place. And I think crypto, from a power usage and environmental usage, from an actual practical functionality, you know, will it be something that's practical and used in the future? Possibly. It's definitely not a definitely, but definitely, you know, it is possibly. But it's not something I would like to make money out of. And I did make money out of it, I'd give it to charity.
Interesting. Riddle me this though, Batman. Digital cash. Are we nearly there? In terms of digital cash, I don't like using cash anymore. Mm. Everything is little tap.
Yeah.
Is that a variation on the theme?
Don't know. And again, look, I'm not an expert in any of this. I'm not an expert in fiat currencies. I'm just not. So what I would say is I don't carry cash. I have about 200 euros in my wallet. I'd say it has been there since Christmas.
emergency money.
And I just, you know, I tap for absolutely everything. And actually, I use Apple Pay for absolutely everything. And it's just so handy. And, you know, we even have expense cards in the office. And the one we have doesn't have Apple Pay. And I'm like, we got to move it. It means I have to carry another card. So I definitely think digital payments is there. Where all the currency piece is going to end up, I would, if I was to bet on one, I'd be betting on the currencies, not the cryptos.
Mm.
And I think the big challenge for me is that until it actually has a stable, and I know they're doing stable coins now, but until it has an element of stability, people don't want to be paid in it. If you don't want to be paid in it, then, you know, you're not going to spend it as a primary source. At the moment, the majority of it is I buy it for a euro, sell it to you for 150, somebody buys it for 2 quid, 250, and it's effectively a big circle.
Yeah, it is.
And the question is, will the music stop?
Hope not. Enterprise Ireland helps to support and fund a vibrant startup ecosystem, providing supports, insights, and network connections to the most ambitious Irish startups. From expert advice to raising funding, exploring opportunities in international markets to strategic planning, Enterprise Ireland is here to support you in those important startup moments. For more information about how Enterprise Ireland can support you on your startup journey, visit enterprise-ireland.com. Enterprise Ireland, helping Irish startups go global. I think I know the answer to this. What's the daily habit that is the secret to your success?
I would say it is having my vision board visible to me and to my colleagues and family.
I've written on the top of my notes, so I make notes. If you're not watching on YouTube, I make notes as we're chatting. Some of it's about clips or ideas, and the first thing I've written up the top is make a vision board. That's interesting, because I have one on Pinterest, but I don't see it all the time. I have to keep logging in.
Yeah.
Going to do that this weekend, promise. Yeah. That's interesting, though. I thought I was going to say meditation. What entrepreneur should everyone...
By the way.
Did you? Just popped out. What entrepreneur should everyone be following and looking at in 2025?
Ooh. So my challenge with this question is I have a, you know, so we have 1,000 customers, maybe 100 of them are friends of mine, and so many of them have absolutely amazing businesses, right?
Okay, you've clarified it. You've qualified it now, and no one's going to be hurt.
No,
if you have a favorite,
but you know, there's so many. I mean, I'm gonna say, so there's some really cool young entrepreneurs, and you know, we discussed Anya Kennedy beforehand, and actually, I remember her podcast on this, and myself and my wife were actually driving, I think, from Galway back to Dublin, and we both listened to it intently. I remember we pulled into a petrol station. And we both sat in the car for like 10 minutes before we turned it off
go
inside.
I love Anya. I'm like her PR department. I keep just plugging her to everybody. She's super.
Yeah, she's got such energy. I mean, company called LED Group, Mick Slane Jr. Mick is and his dad, I mean, an incredible family. But, you know, they've just been...
What's the second name?
Slain. And they've just been going gangbusters in the last couple of years. And Mick, you know, went to Australia, helped build out their business in Australia, came back as sales manager, took over in 2020 as CEO. And it's just one of those really modest, really nice guy, really cool business. You know, I could probably list 50 more. But I think one of the great things in Ireland is there are so many really cool companies.
I agree. People, not so much anymore because I've kind of proved them wrong, but in the early stages, people are like, you're going to run out of people pretty quick, aren't you? No, not at all. And they forget how cyclical things are, as in like there's people starting all the time.
Yeah,
it's not like a static thing. Like it's just people starting all the time. It's kind of a variation on this question. So you can give a shout out to someone else or the same people again. I'm going to give you €1 million. You can invest in one person or one company. Who is it?
So there is a company called Cooperative Learning Helping Hands, Maria Garvey. And what it is it's a bullying application. Not an application to help you bullying, but to prevent it. But you put it into schools and it helps teachers to understand the class dynamic. So they're able to understand. And Maria's worked in child psychology and bullying her whole life, right? I hope she doesn't mind me saying she's retirement age. This is her legacy. And she's effectively put 40 years of learning into a piece of software.
Amazing.
She is absolutely not interested in any money. She is, I want to solve bullying worldwide. And I'd love to give her €1 million and just make that.
Give me the name of it again.
So it's Cooperative Learning is the company. Yep. Helping Hands is the application.
Deadly.
And what it does, again, it's for schools.
And what's the founder's name, sorry?
Maria Garvey.
Maria Garvey.
And she, you know, ultimately every school in Ireland should have it. If I was the Minister for Education, I would sign it off to put it in every school. And it just gives the teacher the information. It teaches them how to deal with it. And they can understand the dynamic because most bullying is hidden. Mm. Teachers aren't aware. Parents aren't aware. And the software, true, I won't give away the secret because if kids are listening, they'll understand it, right? And they'll game it. So, the application is amazing. It helps the teacher run the class.
That sounds unbelievable. Bullying is a massive issue. I think that sounds phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. And I think it could be a worldwide application. And I think she really has the tech to do it.
I hope so. Well, hopefully the shout out gets her some attention. If you were starting from zero again in 2025, what would you build?
I would build an IT security and services business based.
I knew you were going to be one of those. I hate when people say that. I want someone listening to go, I'm going to rob his idea now and start this or teach up as an angel investor. So what would you build?
So I would build a company that brings entrepreneurs together, breaks them up into small groups that work together to help solve each other's problems. And I think, you know, a lot of founders and companies, and I've done this over the years and it's been really successful, but a lot of founders, when they have a problem, if they go home and, you know, tell their partner, look, we've no cash for wages, it's like, okay, well, the stress, you're bringing it home.
Yeah. It's not fair either. Like, you're making it someone else's problem.
If you go and tell your shareholders, they're like, you know, okay, we've got to get you out of business and get somebody else in, right? Whereas you go in and meet people who don't have a vested interest in your business, but they are entrepreneurs. Somebody's going to say, here, give us your dad a book. Right. He owes you $52,000. How well do you know him? Not really very well. Ring him and ask him for $52,000. It's like, well, I can't do that. Well, why not? You're going to go bust if you don't. So ring the guy. Mm. Ring him and go, look, we're under cash flow issue. Is there a possibility? Can we get paid early? It's like, yeah, no problem. We'll transfer now. Bank done. Mm. And it's just practical little solution. So I think I would love to build a global network of CEOs and actually help them work with each other to solve each other's problems. I know there's lots of things out there that kind of does that in different ways, but it's the emergency crisis and getting people around and being part of a network. And secondly, just having an all-inclusive, like YPO is only for people who are in before they're 45. EOY, you have a big barrier to get in the first place, but to actually have something where everyone can join. And I think the young startup with loads of ideas and loads of energies and no world advice, and you've got somebody who's 50 years doing it, you know, they can both learn from each other. And I think building that will be phenomenal.
Okay, we're going to have to talk, because that was what I was asking the first question downstairs, because I've been kind of putting this in like ad hocly together, doing lunches and dinners and breakfasts. We're doing our first retreat in Marbella in September. I'm looking at doing, there's been a huge kind of like demand for it. I'm looking at doing like something in the K Club in October. And it's based around that. The Dunbar's number of 150. Cap out the members at that, so you only have, and then break them into smaller groups. I think the peer learning from just watching and experimenting with these groups, it's powerful. So I always do the one problem dinner. You come to dinner, what do? Kevin, Nostra, what does Nostra do? It does this. What's your biggest problem right now? So we're trying to hire a CFO. And we go around the room. And I, Owen was at the last one actually, and we're chatting about like, and Squid were there. And like everyone has variations on the same problem. But instantly, it just let people like suddenly go, I need to talk to you. We figured that out last year.
Yeah.
It's magic. Yeah. It's absolutely magic.
Yeah. But it's also, you're sitting there and somebody says, I have a problem, right? Our sales in, you know, our sales in the UK are down, right? And you're going, oh, okay, have you gone over? And they're like, no. You're going to go over. Well, the sales manager's come over here. Okay, well, are you going to go over to him? I'm not sure. Okay, well, maybe you should. And you give him loads of advice. And then you come back and you go, geez, I have an issue. I'm part of my business and I need to try it down. So I'm giving advice that I'm not taking myself. And
actually, isn't it funny? Because you can always see everyone else's issue.
And that's the power. Yeah. That is the power. Honestly, I would say that if you're going to build it around something, I would build it around the fact that actually giving advice is generally the advice you're not taking yourself, and it forces you to take it.
That's so funny, because we can see everyone else's. Our own problems are here, and I can see yours across the table and go, oh, Kevin, look, it's obvious. What do you believe that other people would strongly disagree with or find strange?
I've probably given you enough already that people find strange or startling. I would say that your business has, in my opinion, for long-term success in a business, it has to be a good business at its soul. And I think where you're making money to make money, personally, certainly in my experience, it's never worked for me. If I've ever done anything to make money, I haven't made money. If I've done something because I understand a problem and I know how to fix it, I've done well. And I've done something for the right reasons. And I would actually say that, you know, if I do something or invest in something that's, you know, that's a quick return or whatever, and it's not something I totally believe in or not something I'm really behind, I actually find my own company takes a hit. And they're totally unrelated things, right? So it's a bit mad to say.
That's true, though, because you've deviated slightly off the course. It's the whole thing of the man who chases two rabbits catches none.
Yeah.
But distraction.
Yeah, well, I would actually call it more spiritual than that. I would say I have a view that, you know, you have to be completely congruent in what you want. And if you do the right thing, and sometimes I'd say, if somebody has a problem and they come to me and say, I'm in real trouble, can you help me? Totally unrelated to my business. I could, you know, drive down to Carlo and meet somebody for 2 hours and help them and come back up and we could win a customer. That's how my mind thinks. Totally unrelated.
Yeah.
But the point is karma. I'm a huge believer in karma. So do the right thing and it'll come back at you, and do the wrong thing, it'll come back at you. And you just have to keep doing the right thing.
Yeah, I'm not religious, not in the slightest, but I always say karma and energy are the two things that I firmly believe. Mick, it's public knowledge, you won't mind me saying this in the podcast, Mick Corcoran, who's been on the podcast twice, incredible guy, really big fan of him, ex-head of social at Ryanair. He went into business with this guy. This is all over the paper, so I'm not exactly scooping it here. And your man defrauded the company for a large amount of money. Mick had only gone in there 2 years ago, built it up. And Mick posted all about it this week. And the amount of messages I got from it. And my message back to most people was, the karma will get him in the end. It's easy for me to shrug my shoulders and say, oh, a million, whatever, is gone. But like, it's true. Like, you know, the energy you put out into the world, might be today, might be tomorrow. But you have to live in that body. You have to live in that head of, that's how you operate as a person.
Yeah, and I think going back to it, I mean, look, you know, would you prefer to be happily married with three kids, living in a one bedroom apartment in city centre, or living in a mansion in LA with 100 million in the bank and sitting there drunk every night and no family. You know, life, karma doesn't necessarily mean you'll have loads of money or you want loads of money. Karma for me means you're going to be happy, you're not going to be happy, and contentment comes from, you know, going, I want to be content, I want to do every single day, I want to help make a difference, and if I meet somebody, I want them to leave feeling a little bit better than before I met them, and that compounding impact of that means life will be good to you.
It's like that thing, you know, just a couple of seconds and you go to bed at night and just the eyelids go down. What's playing? What movie's playing behind those eyelids for that couple of seconds? Because that's when it all starts to slow down. Mm. What's been your worst investment?
So I would say I diversified when I was too small to diversify. And when I decided I was going to help a million people, I invested in gyms and chiropractic business, as I said. And the chiropractic business is actually a good business, and I liked the gyms weren't a good business, and I didn't understand them enough or love it enough to be focused on it, and that cost me dearly with my health. And I remember very clearly one day being in Canada in 2012, and you know, I was on a holiday, which was, you know, that sounds exotic, but it was a 400 quid return flight, and I was staying with friends out there. And I remember I was driving along the road and I was so stressed and I had so much going on and my whole body was starting to shut down. And I remember just getting out of the car and getting sick in a ditch and coming back to the car and having to get out again. And I remember just sitting on the side of a road, friends of mine in the car, and I was trying to hide it from them. And I was like, I was just riddled with anxiety. And that all came from, you know, obviously the recession and the financial impact of all that and having no money. And I remember at that time I was away and I got a call from the accountant in the office saying, we've no money and this has happened and that's happened and the other thing's happened since you've gone. And I was like, okay, I don't know what to do. So like, we need to get my car, it's at my house, go get it and sell it. And they did and sold it. And then I arrived back to having no car and still in financial difficulty. And I was just like that entire period. And I invested predominantly time in those businesses because I actually got one of them for nothing. Somebody said, here, take the business. It's and I was less than break even. So you're buying a loss-making entity. But the sheer impact on me as a person from 2010 to 2013 and doing that was enormous. And actually it was when Lisa rang me to say Harry was gone, I was like, I'm done. I just was like, in 7 months, I'm going to have a baby. I am done with all this. I'm going to focus on one thing. And I was like, there's my deadline, bang. And that was a catalyst for change.
A forcing function. What's been your best investment?
Ooh, well, that's good. To me, it's actually very simple. It is the investment in education on the mind. And I have done Tony Robbins, I've done online courses, I've read books, I've studied it, I've watched hundreds of YouTube videos, I've done meditation. So I think for anyone who doesn't understand the human mind and how it works and self-talk and managing it and managing your mind, and you know, for everyone listening who's there with a mind that's racing at them and telling them all the things that are wrong, there is a lot you can do that's inside your control. And for me, it's the process. And the process that I've learned is weight training, get your body strong. Mm. It actually helps slow your mind down. You're not going to be sitting there bench pressing, you know, I could do a big number, but I'll do an honest number, bench pressing 85 kilos.
Hey, going, it's big. I'd be happy with that.
So you're doing that, right? And you're doing it, and you're like in your fourth one, and you're not sitting there going, do I need to do payment on the bank tomorrow? So that, to me, shuts the mind down. Swimming in the sea, ice baths help shut the mind down. They're all, for me, about shutting your mind down. And people need to focus on getting that voice to shut up. It serves nobody any value. And then when you get it closed down, then you decide what you want to do in life. And the first thing is shut your mind down, get that voice to stop. Loads of things you can do. Put it into ChatGPT. I'm sure it'll tell you how to do it. But and if you can achieve that in life, you've done better than most people in the world.
It all starts with self-mastery. Yeah, you can shape the world around that. final piece or final question. What's the best bit of advice you've heard in the last 12 months?
I get a lot of advice from a lot of people. So, what is the best piece in the last 12 months? I would say it is, I'm going to quote Barry on this, right? So Barry, my brother, right? Back yourself. So, you know, quite often business owners and founders and people like us, you know, you get to a certain stage and you're like, this is the biggest business we've ever been in. We need to bring in outside expertise. We need to do all these things. And you do need to do that. But sometimes you need to go, you know what? I can push through this next barrier and back yourself and we can get it done. And for me, it's about actually realizing that you're probably better than you think and you're probably more capable. So, you know, get external sounding, get external advice, get on courses, do education. So continuous education is critical. But also for all the founders out there, go back yourself.
Kevin, that was an exceptional chat. We covered a lot there. We're
a lot.
2 hours and 7 minutes in. So if you're still listening, appreciate you still listening. That was an exceptional chat because we covered everything from cybersecurity to spirituality. I think there's not many chats I've had with people that have been as rich and as just engaging. I got a lot out of this personally myself. So thank you so much. Right. Where can people learn more about you, the business, and what you're doing?
Well, me, I'm not sure. You can probably Google it or ChatGPT it and connect with me on LinkedIn. In terms of Nostra, it's nostra.ie. And, you know, what I'd say is our job is to serve Irish businesses here and across the world, and that's what we love doing.
I would be shocked if there's not an inbound of rush of inquiries to you after that beautiful case study we did, because I'm still thinking about it. Kevin, that was absolutely savage. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, Gary.